Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Left. There's a change in today's lineup where Wendy Snyder's name is normally written in. Just put a pencil line through it. Cross it out just for a few days. Uh-huh. Dane Neal is sitting in today. You know Dane. You love Dane from AccessAppetite.com and from his own show on WGN Plus, which you decided to call The Dane Neal Show, and
yes,
that was a wise choice.
You know what, Bill? I'm excited. First off, thanks so much. You know, last night after the game, the coach called me in, and I was like, oh, geez, I don't know. What could it be? And then he's like, you're going
we
to
need
the show?
You in. And I'll tell you what, there's the same anticipation and excitement for you doing the show that the White Sox had for their new pitcher, Shields. We have the same kind of enthusiasm that we know you'll do well, just like they did on the south side.
Don't put that pressure on me, because I think the anticipation for him is that he's going to save. You know, it's like they dropped somebody into the Titanic. Hopefully, he could do something.
Imagine it's your first day. For people who don't know, they got this pitcher Shields from the San Diego Padres. He pitches for the White Sox. The White Sox have had a very, very rough month. They went from first place with a sizable lead to now fourth place with no lead of any kind. And everybody considered him to be something of a bright spot. And then on his first outing with his new team, he gets pretty much booed off the field. He pitches horrendously.
Right.
And it didn't go well for him. Yeah, it'll go much better for you, I predict.
Hopefully. I won't be pitching, and thank goodness for that. But, yeah, you know, you get some anticipation there on the White Sox side, especially when they came out. And I was talking with a friend of mine the day before yesterday about this. The worst thing that the White Sox could have done is get out to that great start.
Yeah.
Because there's so much pressure, so many expectations.
Sure.
You know, and now people are, what do you say, disappointed.
A little bit.
If they just would have came out and just done this part first,
right,
they could have had like a later season run. People would have been excited right now.
Here's a note to Major League teams that are listening.
Flip-flop your streaks.
Flip-flop your streaks. Start out terrible, then do good, not the other way around. Yep. It doesn't disappoint as many people. I want to ask you a question. I know you're involved heavily in the world of food. So there's
you're just noticing my physique heavily.
That was a clue. It wasn't the only thing. There's a story that was one of the top stories last night and then into today, and that's Lisa Madigan and a lawsuit against Jimmy John's. This is the Subway, not the Subway place, the Sub Sandwich place. I can't say Subway.
Right.
Because they're a competitor.
You're obligated
the Sub Sandwich place, where they had a non-compete with their workers over at Jimmy John's, which stated that not only when you work for Jimmy John's can you not work for another sandwich place, which I guess I kind of get, but then for 2 years after, if you're an employee of Jimmy John's and you're getting people sandwiches, making them and delivering them, you still, after 2 years, cannot work for another sandwich place. What's up with that?
I think it goes to show that the workplace situation has been so difficult that employers can just dictate whatever terms that they want. I think what it is that there's proprietary training. When you become a member of the Jimmy John's family, you learn to do things in a different way, and the way is freaky fast. And I think that that's the thing that they don't want you to do. They're okay with you doing other things. You know, maybe going to the store, taking your kid to daycare, maybe going to a ball game.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. You're just not allowed to do anything freaky fast for 2 years.
Is that what it comes down to?
Well, Bill, there's some legal precedent to that. You know, slow and steady wins the race.
Right.
You know, I think they're on good footing here.
it's the exact opposite of that.
No, like, how does that happen? And I don't know what the demographic or age level for an average Jimmy John's employee or the person going freaky fast, but so how do you tell a kid or a young adult once they leave Jimmy John's, they go, oh yeah, I looked at your contract, you know, you can't work here at Burger King for another year and a half.
Well, does it even extend out to Burger King, or is it only other sandwich? Is it Subway? Is it Jersey Mike's?
Oh,
is it any
category
of those? Yeah, is it only the sandwich places? I'm not sure how they break it down, but if
we'll have to get a legal expert in here for that.
At the Jimmy John's by us, I would say, because that's the one that I've been to most frequently, most of the workers are in their early 20s, give or take a year or two, early 20s, right? So if you're in your early 20s and you know, they're probably not making an incredible amount of money, why would you agree to something like that? Except you probably think, once I've done this sort of work, I'll probably go on to do something else. I won't continue my career.
I'll go freaky faster somewhere.
way freaky faster.
I think what it is, it's what they call in the business kind of a legal iceberg, right? We've all seen those kind of boilerplate contracts, 4 or 5 pages just to say, I'm going to do this and you're going to pay me that
right,
kind of thing. Who even signs that? Like for that kind of job, normally isn't it a 1-page thing where you just check off a box saying that you're alive? But
and you won't steal.
Who knows what else is in there? Because if there's a non-compete, maybe there's all sorts of crazy things, like the ability to wear the Jimmy John's logo in public, to speak on behalf of Jimmy John's, even at someone's front door. Who knows?
Right. You do not represent the Jimmy John company, even though you make the sandwiches and deliver the sandwiches. You do not represent us.
without, you know, express written consent prior to the.
When I was, I worked at Channel 7 for a while on a show called 190 North. Do you remember 190 North?
Of course.
Right. So I was on the first season of 190 North with Janet Davies and some other people. And then I was, one time I was on with Steve Cochran, the same Steve Cochran who just did a show. And on the show, they introduced me, Steve introduced me as Channel 7's very own Bill Leff, nice. Right? Because that's what Channel 7 would do. If you were an established person over at Channel 7,
they embrace you.
You were Channel 7's own Ron Majors, you were Channel 7's own Kathy Brock. So Steve introduced me as Channel 7's own Bill Leff. And then I got to work the next day, and there was a note for me in my mailbox from management saying, you are not to be introduced as Channel 7's own. They essentially disavowed any knowledge or ownership of me, which I don't blame them for, but it hurt my feelings. So I'm like, well, I didn't even say it.
I think just a minor adjustment, really. Channel 7's, like, you know, associate or a guy Channel 7 knows.
Right. A guy who we let in the building every now and then. Please welcome him.
We're sort of familiar with that kind of thing.
All right. We're getting some calls on this. We're curious as to the tactics. And I do have to say, in all fairness, Jimmy Johns has said that this was a practice that they no longer employ, that now if you're an employee of Jimmy Johns, you are free when you're done to go and work for other sandwich places. But for years, that was not the case. What are your thoughts on this? Let's go to Bud. Hey, Bud, it's WGN. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing real good.
What are your thoughts?
You just sort of brought up what they said. They discontinued that practice over a year ago, although some of the outlets still had it in their applications.
They did. They did.
But they've never enforced it.
Yeah, because you wonder how much connection do you have with someone that's delivering sandwiches for you? Maybe a year down the road, are you still monitoring, you know, what they do?
Watching them, yeah, their career path, yeah.
Well, I would imagine it was primarily in there for management or people who did the training or had training, like you mentioned. It's they have proprietary training,
right?
That they conduct.
But can it be anything, Bud? Do you?
I worked for an office equipment company, and when I left, I had to agree not to go to another office equipment company because I had information on their clients. So,
and you were okay with that from the very beginning. You thought, yeah, that could hurt their business. I'm agreeable to that.
I thought it was fair. I mean, why should they pay to train me? Give me all the information I have, and then I take it over to a competitor.
But can I throw out a hypothetical situation? Let's say you're really good at that, and I trust that you are, and you're having a hard time finding work once you no longer work for that office supply company, and you could potentially go bankrupt from not being employed, but they wouldn't go bankrupt just from not having you on as part of their team, would they?
Well, I knew that was the situation, and if I didn't like it, then I shouldn't have quit.
Right? I guess. Yeah. All right. Well, Bud, thank you. I appreciate the call. Have a great day.
It was a clause. If they did fire me, then all bets were off.
Oh, really? Then you could go somewhere else. All right. All right. Thanks, Bud. Take care.
And Bill, I think that's the legalese. Like, all bets were off.
Yeah.
Was the way that they did it. And maybe that's part of it is, you know, if there's kind of special techniques, the freaky fasting, people sue for almost anything. If the foot long is 11 and a half inches, then somebody's going to sue somewhere.
Right.
What constitutes legally freaky fast?
Good question. Very good question. All right. We have other calls on this. We're at 312-981-7200. Again, that question is Jimmy Johns wanted their employees, once they were done working for them, to not have the freedom to go and work for another sandwich company. Is that fair or not fair? You decide. More after this. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy Snyder. We're talking about a court case that's come up over Jimmy Johns. Lisa Madigan and Jimmy Johns entangled in a court battle. Jimmy Johns has what they're calling highly restrictive non-compete agreements. They say that if you're an employee of theirs, not just during your tenure there at Jimmy Johns, but then for 2 years after, they don't want you working at another fast food sandwich shop.
And Bud had mentioned that they actually had never enforced it, but you wonder, like, legally, if you could just, hey, we'll just put a bunch of things in there that if we ever come across that,
right,
then we've got, you know, a legal leg to stand on.
I know.
But should it be allowed to be in there?
I don't, I'm questioning that my own self. Let's talk to Dave. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hey, how you doing? Hang up.
You want to hang up and listen for your answer?
Hey, there you are.
Okay, good. What's up, Dave?
You know, I used to work for this concrete company for 22 years.
and I got laid off and everything.
Yeah.
And when they give my subs pay and everything, they said they had a sign in it, and they said, oh, you can't work for another company in so many years and everything. You know, I told them, hey, you know, I got a family. You know, I got my life and my family to take care of. If I find another job, if it is with another coffee company, I'm going to take it.
Sure.
My livelihood. You don't care about me after I leave here. You know, and I don't care about you. If I go with another coffee company, I'm gonna do it. They didn't like that. It took me a while to get my son's pay after that. And that was it. You know, it's wrong.
It is wrong.
You got a life to live. You got your family.
Sure. Dave, of course.
And Bill, of course, that's the opposite, the exact opposite of a non-compete is the I don't care about you, you don't care about me agreement.
Right.
Which is
right. Well, they're not going to go. You could potentially, that's the problem with this, is you, the worker, the employee, could potentially go bankrupt by not working for a half a year or a year.
I did.
But the company's, oh, you did. So you know.
Yeah. Me and my wife went bankrupt and everything. But everything's better now. You know, my daughter got married. They got good students. They graduated from college and everything.
Oh, good.
And
good.
In the medical. But it's good now. Hey, I always figure many guys can say they can keep a job, keep around for 22 years downtown Chicago. Ever. I did my job. I raised my kids. Hey, they're lost. And one more thing.
Yeah.
Thank you for that special for the steaks for Father's Day.
Oh, for the Omaha steaks? It's good stuff.
Oh, I called my wife. I said, oh, that's what I want for Father's Day. She ordered them, and she ordered double.
Beautiful. I like to hear that. Dave, I'm glad the story had a happy ending.
Man.
Have a good weekend.
I can't wait.
Okay, take care. Bye.
I wonder if Omaha Steaks, they probably don't have any kind of agreement like that.
They don't want you eating other steaks for 2 years after you eat their steak.
You shouldn't even want to. But, Bill, you know, over the last X amount of years, you know, since 2008 and the economic meltdown and everything, I mean, it's been hard enough for people to find a job of any kind.
Right. So and sometimes you agree to things that you wouldn't normally agree to just to have a job, right?
Well, I'm thinking that there should be some way to opt out of that, or maybe some legal mechanism to maybe like petition.
Agreed.
To have that kind of change.
Yep. Let's talk to Becky and find out what she knows about this. Hi, Becky. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
What do you think of all this?
Hey, listen, first of all, where's Wendy? Is it like bring your cousin to work day up there? What's going on?
It is bring your cousin to work day. My cousin Dane was kind enough to show up with me.
Thanks, Cousin Bill.
Okay.
She'll
nice.
Be back so in a few days.
Good. I miss her. Okay.
With her cousin.
So Jimmy John, you know, in my personal opinion, of course, is kind of a slime ball. And the guy is just trying to control these poor sandwich makers who make less than $10 an hour, probably. And this is a lot of nonsense. And when I heard Lisa Madigan was going after him, I was like, you go, girl, because you shouldn't be able to restrict people's ability to earn an income. And that's the one good thing we've got left in the state of Illinois that we, from what I understand, are less restrictive on non-compete agreements.
Sure.
If it's a professional services like that previous caller was talking about, that's one thing where you're making an educated decision to move on.
Yeah.
And you've got a sales contact list. But we're talking sandwiches here, and I think this is just another way for Jimmy John King Sandwich Boy to try to control people.
But I don't want to say anything bad about him.
I don't need his sandwiches.
If you've, Becky, you've been into Jimmy John's, right, at some point?
Oh, yeah, I'm from downstate. He grew up here. I was at Easter when he was starting his company.
Well, then you know when you're in there, there's a big sign that says free smells. They give you free things like aromas just for going in. They're very fair.
Right. Yeah, and he gives stuff away, you know, to try to kind of make up, I think, for the other poor decisions he makes in his life. So,
Wow.
I see you've met.
Really
Well, and Bill and I were talking about
it. Call in.
Becky, you're very welcome. Now, don't call any other shows for 2 years. You promise?
I promise. That's understood.
That's in the agreement.
Between you and us.
Excellent.
That's right.
Thank you, Becky, from me and my cousin Dane.
Day.
Okay, bye.
Well,
we were talking about it, maybe it was during the break or earlier, where there's some jobs where you can understand. You're working for NASA, you're building missiles.
Sure.
It should be at least 2 years before you can go work at ISIS.
Right.
Or something like
right.
that. But with sandwiches, there should be some kind of like level of job that just doesn't matter. It'll only matter to the worker.
Maybe like a 30-minute non-compete clause where you can't work for another sandwich place for a half an hour. Does that seem fair?
The weekend.
Right. Right. By Monday, anything you want. All right, we have a big show for you today. It's me, Bill Leff, and of course my cousin Dane Neal sitting in. It's Bring Your Cousin to Work Day.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said. And he popped the pot roast all over his chest. Excitable boy, they all said.
Is anyone more excitable and a boy than David Hochberg, the Vice President of Lending over at Pearl Mortgage. His website, of course, WGNDavid.com. It's us, it's Bill, and Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy. David, welcome. We were just saying, and this is off air, but we can bring this on air. You heard or overheard us mention from time to time we'll have a guest on who gets a little bit excited.
Yeah.
And we pay tribute to you whenever that happens.
And you're like, you're going to go Hochberg, aren't you? And
we
I was listening
that.
One day when Wendy's husband, Jimmy Mack, good friend of mine, was in, and you're like, oh, you've got ready to go Hochberg. And I told the person on the phone I have to call them back because I heard that on the speakers.
That's high praise.
High praise. And there's two levels of it. There's Hochberg, which means to get extremely excited very quickly. And then there's Full Metal Hochberg, in which nobody's
you start
safe.
Talking when you run out of breath, and then you somehow find a way to keep talking.
Right? But all with the underlying desire, the need, if you will, to help people.
Always with help.
With love.
Yep, always that. At some point, I predict that you will be a Jeopardy answer.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure you will be a Jeopardy answer at some point.
What is Hochberg?
Right.
All right. Sorry, it was Full Metal Hochberg.
Right. That's right. I'm sorry, says Alex Trebek. All right, a lot to talk to you about today. But first, you wanted to mention this. And boy, is this important today and year-round, always. Yep. The importance of financial literacy. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I was listening the other day when Terry Savage was on. And she's like, I got to get into the high schools. And I'm like, well, sweetheart, I'm already in the high schools. So, and I think it's important to bring it up right now because I talked to my friend, the principal at Glenbrook North High School. I did a seminar at Stagg High School in the spring. Mm-hmm. And so I called my friend John Finnanen, who's a principal now at Glenbrook North High School. We started talking about it, and I've been communicating back and forth with their consumers education teacher about going out teaching high school kids what is credit, why is credit important, why is credit important to a high school kid, why should a high school kid give a dang gong about what's going on with their credit. Okay, show them real examples of what excellent credit, good credit, poor credit and credit challenge does when going to buy a car. Because when I was out at Stagg High School, all they cared about was car loans.
Okay. Right.
All right. Because I found out that car loans are very important to high school kids, which is great. Okay.
Yeah.
So I asked the teachers at Stagg High School, I'm like, listen, I'll come out there. I'm from Northbrook. It's already on the south side. I drove an hour and 15 minutes. I said, have them submit the questions that they have that they want answered. So I'm not just up there talking to some big mouth 50-year-old, 49-year-old big shot up there. I want to talk to them about what they want, are interested in.
Makes
and then
sense.
Base the seminar around that, the seminar, the conversation around that.
Yeah.
And when the students started seeing their questions come up, I had a PowerPoint presentation, started seeing their questions come up on the screen, they locked in.
Yeah.
Okay. And I could tell who submitted the question because they sat up a little taller in their chairs. And a lot of the kids asked the same question, right? So like six kids asked the same question. So I saw six kids stand up and sit higher in their chair. And then once they saw that I actually took their question and I'm answering their specific question, they became more engaged.
Yeah.
And they became more empowered because now they had the information that they wanted to know about. It wasn't extra credit. They didn't have to do it. You know, the consumer education teacher said, if you have a question, this guy's on the radio, this guy's on show, he's on GN, he answers people's questions, he's on TV, he does this.
Right.
So, boom, we locked in for a good hour. The kids were engaged. High school kids engaged in anything.
That says a lot.
For more than 17 seconds.
Right.
It is a great thing.
Sure.
And then it was funny because I'm friends with Eric Vates, okay, of CJ Wilson Mazda.
Mm-hmm.
And I got all these questions about car loans. I'm like, hang on. I got Eric on my phone. I'm like, Eric, I've got 55 students that hung around after. They got questions about car loans. I don't know anything about them. Here's their questions. And I had him on speaker, and he started answering the kids' questions about car loans.
Very good.
So that's what it's all about.
Well, when you had that group of kids there, did you explain to them first off, like, you need to be armed with the information of what your personal situation is and what it should be? So that the first time, and I think we've all been there at some point, the first time that you're even aware of the situation is you're battling with the finance guy trying to put in the Rusty Jones undercoating and, going to talk to the manager. You need to know where you stand before that.
You need to know where you stand. You need to know why it's important you want to go get a car loan and you're in high school. You got to go with your parents, okay, because you have no credit history. How can a kid get credit? Well, you could get a secured credit card when you're 18. Okay, and you could start, a lot of people don't know that. You could,
a debit card earlier, but a credit card at 18, right?
A debit card does nothing. It's completely worth it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay, and everybody thinks, I'm starting
here
already.
It comes,
okay.
Kane. Oh, no. Here okay. it comes. I told you, Mount Vesuvius.
The debit erupt. Cards, everybody's like, well, I got a debit card, and I'm using it. Well, that's great. Okay, the banks give you a debit card, and you're using your own money. There's uh-huh. no risk.
Right.
There's no responsibility. They, you know, you want to charge something for $100 and you got 80? Decline.
Right.
Okay.
By the way, really quickly, if anybody had 6 minutes and 9 seconds in their office pool, you just won. Congratulations.
Yeah, the under. Okay.
Right. That's right.
So I, you know, it's, you know, I got a debit card. Well, that's great. Okay. Phenomenal. Who cares?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're not building any credit. I got a 25-year-old woman working for me right now.
Yeah.
Right. 25 years old, very successful, no credit. He came to the St. Charles, Zanies in St. Charles for the credit seminar we did a month ago.
Yeah.
As soon as she left, she went to Bank of America, her bank, and got a prepaid credit and got a secured credit card to start building her
Fantastic.
Credit. And she works for us.
Good.
Okay, so these are the things that people need to know.
Right.
Why is it important? Give them real life examples. If you have good credit, this is what you're going to pay every month for a car.
Right.
Because that's important to high school kids. You have bad credit, this is what you're going to pay for a car. You don't work anyway, right? God forbid you get off your rear end to go shovel a sidewalk when it snows. Okay, so this is how much money you have to ask your parents for to pay for your car.
Right.
Okay, so show them real life examples and what they have to do, and
yeah.
then answer the kids' questions. So this is what I'm doing and starting to do, and I got involved, and because of the seminar we did
yeah.
last month, there was a representative from an organization called, it's a non-for-profit 503C organization
yeah.
called Heartland Institute of Financial Education. I
yeah.
am partnering with them. They came to me and said, hey, what you did was phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, you're not like the other mortgage guys that try to sell people and hook people into loans. It was just like, hey, we're here to give information. So I'm partnering with them. I'm actually in the process, if you could believe this.
Yes.
Getting my certificates and classes to become a certified financial educator. I'm
oh,
not
great.
There yet, so
nice.
I'm taking courses.
Congratulations.
So I'm gonna be working right now. I'm not part of them yet, but we're partnering
yep.
in a seminar next Thursday. Because everybody's like, well, what's credit? Why is credit important? And then I always get, how do I save for college?
Right.
How do I save for retirement? How do I budget? It's
yeah.
not my specialty.
Right.
Right. And now I partnered with this not-for-profit organization.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing a free seminar, financial empowerment seminar.
Yes.
Next Thursday, 7 to 9 at the Oak Brook Financial Center.
Uh-huh.
I had a little computer snafu. I apologize. But if you go to WLS David. And you just
WGN
send
WGN David?
I'm sorry. I'm on WGN now. I was on the up. Well, no,
don't
was,
worry.
All right, hit
You're
the
under a lot of stress. That's all right.
Sorry, Todd. That was a slip. All right, WGN. It's
go
only
WGN
on every
WGN David.
It's only on every flipping wall in this. In this,
right.
in this
don't
student.
Worry.
I'm on WGN David. Thanks for pointing that out.
That's okay.
So I don't say it again. You go to WGN David. You send me an email. Hey, and it's in Oak Brook.
Uh-huh.
Right? St. Charles, a little far out there. We still got 150 people. It's a great turnout.
Good.
Thanks to the folks at Zanies.
Good.
But we're going to be in Oak Brook. It's free.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about credit.
Mm-hmm.
So come on out, talk about credit. Why credit's important. What is credit? How do I enhance it? Hey,
yeah.
I got great credit. How do I keep it great? Hey, I've got kids graduating high school, going into college, got college kids coming out of college, going out that don't know anything about. Bring them.
Bring them all.
Bring them all.
Yep.
It's
and
free.
I want to tell the end to your story about speaking over at Stagg High School because you're too shy to say this. Who do you think, Dane, was elected as king of the prom court there at Amos Alonzo Stagg High School? Our own David Hochberg.
Yeah, it's a little awkward.
The kids loved him.
It was a little awkward. I had a
just
I was
making
in a,
connections there.
Yeah,
I was
that's
in
all
a
you
float
do.
With a 17-year-old. The cops were in the next
all right,
car.
Stop. It's getting weird.
Yeah.
It's getting weird. We'll take a quick break and then more with David Hochberg. He's slightly excitable, you know. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy on WGN. All right, a lot going on today. David Hochberg is here, the excitable boy from Pearl Mortgage. Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy Snyder for today. You were going to do stand-up comedy. You had
yeah.
never done stand-up before, and you've done this now.
I've done
right?
it.
And
yeah.
how did that play out? You
it was
were
great.
Zanies.
It was one of the greatest. I was sicker than a dog. And
why were you sick? Because you were nervous or just some
no,
other
because
ailment?
I have three kids that are constant germ factories,
oh.
and
oh.
they came down with something and, of course, took dad down. So
oh.
thanks, kids. I appreciate that. Can't wait to have some more.
A lot of time comedians will kind of bring in the stories of
sure.
their life, right,
yeah.
of their experiences and share them. So was your set kind of mortgage advice centric?
No, it was more. I told the story about my vasectomy, which is always
a big thing. That's fun.
I told, and then I told about what else did I talk. I talked about that and about how about a short-term relationship I had at a strip club in Indianapolis after an industry dinner.
Very nice.
When I was in my 20s. So, so as clean as I could get, though.
Reminiscent of an old Red Skelton bit,
I go to DeCoste. I'm like, what am I going to do? He's like, you're a funny guy. He's like, I laugh every time I talk to you. Just talk about your life. You make people laugh. I'm like, well, thanks for the tip, John.
That's all it takes.
That was specific and great, but I guess, you know, it's good. I had a blast.
We're getting calls and texts for you, David. Let's start out with Kathy on line three. Kathy, hi. You're talking to David Hochberg from Pearl Mortgage. Go ahead.
Good morning, David. How are you today?
Good, Kathy. What's up?
Good. Quick question for you. I have a 14-year-old and was listening to you on the radio, and when is the right time to open up a credit card for a child?
18. Is the legal age that you
can't do it before you're 18, right?
They won't let you. Yeah. Right. It's 18. Okay. And again, keep an eye on it. Okay.
Sure.
I recommend starting out with a prepaid credit card, what's called a secured credit card. Okay. I know Fifth Thirds has got one. And I know that I like Fifth Thirds for the secured credit cards because I know that they report to the three major credit bureaus. Okay. So you get, it'll show up and then all of a sudden what'll happen 4 or 5 months later, you know, your kid will start getting credit card offers up the wazoo because now he or she is on the grid and all of a sudden everybody's going to want to give your son or daughter a credit card. But 18 is the legal age, and I like the secured credit cards. What's a secured credit card? For the people out there that are texting and asking, what's a secured credit card? It's when you give the bank, let's say $500. I think you could start out with as little as $250 or $3. And you give them money. They give you a credit card. The limit's $300. You have 300 live rounds, okay, on the credit card. It's just like a debit card, but reversed, right? You have to give the money up front. You charge, you charge, and then they take money away, whittle down your availability. You get a bill. You pay the bill. It gets you into a habit of paying things off, and it's kind of like training wheels for credit.
It would be,
and it's perfect. So after about a year, year and a half, check with Fifth Thirds or the company that you're going to, because some companies, Kathy, don't unsecure those credit cards. I know Fifth Third still does, and they'll hold that money. But Fifth Third gives it back and turns it into an unsecured credit card, and then it becomes like a regular credit card.
Why would that be different than a regular credit card?
Because you're paying.
I know, I understand the concept, but why wouldn't we just go and open up a MasterCard?
Because they won't give it to somebody that's completely off the grid.
You have to establish some credit first.
Okay. And then what I recommend is you really only need two credit cards. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Two or three.
I have one.
But you know, some people, I've got American Express and a Visa. Mm-hmm. Okay. I put all the business through the American Express, and whoever doesn't take American Express, I put it through Visa because I like the points. I like to keep it centralized and everything else. That's just me.
Sure.
I'm a points, not, you know, crazy lunatic. So, but that's just me. But, you know, but for some other people, you know, two or three is good if you want to establish credit, right? Mm-hmm. You have car loans, Kathy. You have a mortgage or something like that. Other credit out there.
Right.
Okay. So you have a good mix. Okay. Somebody starting out, you want to have two or three credit cards to establish a nice flat base, a good foundation. So when they go get a car, they've got established credit. When they go get a mortgage, they have established credit. It just, again, you're asking me a question specifically for an 18-year-old, and that's why I'm giving you an 18-year-old answer or somebody that's starting out for their credit. Yeah.
Establishing a baseline credit.
Right. Okay. Somebody like you who has a mortgage, who has a car, one credit card is perfectly fine if that's what you want.
Right. Okay. All right.
Kathy, thanks.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. We appreciate it. When you're getting that first credit card, it's the one that you're talking about, you're going to pay a slightly higher interest rate, aren't you? Because you're new to this game.
Yeah, but who cares? Because you're going to pay it off in full all the time.
Yeah, hopefully.
Okay, if you know, it's going to cost you $20, $30, $40, $50. You know, Fifth Third's going to charge you a VIG in order to get it. You know, it's going to be a fee to get the card. So what? You pay the fee. It doesn't matter what the interest rate is. You're going to pay it off every single month. You're not taking the credit out to load up and go to Apt and start buying a 50-inch TV for $1,500,
right?
You're using it for T's, toothpaste, toilet paper, tampons, transportation. Okay, and I know you love that, and you're always like, I can't believe you just said it again, but I said it, all right? You know, you're going to use it, and then better yet, when you're starting out, when you get paid, okay, if your kid's working at Jimmy John's and he gets a check on Friday, run over to Fifth Thirds, knock the balance down, and then reload it.
Right.
Okay. Just get into a pattern of paying it.
Right.
Don't keep balances on the credit card if you don't have to. Right. I'm not that naive to, you know, to say that everybody's got money to pay their credit cards off in full. But when you're starting out, definitely pay them off in full.
Yep. Tabasco sauce, not one of the four T's, by the way, Dane. Were you as shocked as I was? Because I was a little bit surprised.
I had it in there, then I crossed it off.
Yep. Yeah.
That's well, he could replace a T as long as it's one of the T's. Right. As long as you don't go over four T's and replace one of the T's with Tabasco sauce, he's good.
Then he's okay. Then he's
fine.
Right. Other than all this, everything's good with you?
Everything's phenomenal. Good. How do I look?
Yeah, never better. You've lost a bunch of weight.
Your cataracts are bad and your eyesight's are gone. But yeah, lost a bunch of weight.
Congratulations.
Put on 7 pounds. Yeah, it's great. I'm getting taller.
I think from the time you walk in here till you leave, you lose 4 or 5
I'm
pounds.
I'm sweating
you
right now.
Four or 5 pounds every time you visit.
Imagine the seats on a heat thing. And by the way, I'm having coffee with the guy that gave all the seats. Yeah, he's in Northbrook, the office supply guy. These phenomenal
ones that are here in the Allstate Showcase studio?
Yeah, that the guests don't fall off and crack their heads and get concussions.
Very nice.
And for those people playing at home and who shouldn't be, of course, the 6:19 where you notice the time, that's categorized. That's early onset Hochberg.
That's what you get. That's another category. David is, of course, the vice president of lending over at Pearl Mortgage, WGNDavid.com. Accept no imitations on that, WGNDavid.com. You can also call him at 312-751-1333. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. It's Bill Leff and it's Dane Neal in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. You remember that?
Yes.
That's Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy Snyder. That, of course, was a running gag on Ronan Martin's Laugh-In for quite a long time.
And was parodied in so many different ways. I mean, it was such a part of the culture that the Here Come the Fudge, and during the break I referenced to Bill the Giggle Snort Hotel take on it, where the older couple from up top brought down some fudge, and they said...
And they said, Here Come the Fudge?
They did say that.
They also, Canfield's Beverages, when they had fudge, Diet Fudge Soda, their tagline was Here Come the Fudge, a reference to Here Come the Judge. The reason we bring this up, and this is a crazy story, this is out of California, there's a judge who was caught on more than one occasion having sex in his chambers.
In the chambers.
In the judge's chambers. And then he was just up for re-election, and everybody thought, well, here's a guy with something of a checkered past.
Right.
He's been caught on more than one occasion of having sex there in the chambers, and he won't be reelected, right? Nope, he was reelected, and by a startling margin, by the way.
Well, Bill, I think it's how you present it and how you embrace the situation. If you come out and apologize and say, you know, I've been wrong and this was a bad... Mm-hmm. But if you come out chanting, Here Come the Judge, everyone just gets behind it. It's that whole mob mentality of, yes, here you come.
He's obviously telling us the truth. A California judge who was reprimanded for having sex with two women in his chambers was... re-elected.
Imagine the judge reprimanding him. This is disappointing.
Right. This is very disappointing. Was reelected on Tuesday by a vote that wasn't even close. Scott Steiner, the Honorable Scott Steiner, and that's in italics.
I want to say, like, that's not all.
Right.
<you know?
laughs> That's in heavy italics. The Honorable Scott Steiner won 56% of the vote against Karen Schatzley, who must be really bad at what she does. Because he was able to very easily beat her. The Associated Press reported this, citing unofficial results from the Orange County Registrar of Voters. Steiner, a Superior Court judge for the past 5 years, was censured in 2014 by the Commission on Judicial Performance. And that's really what it is. It's his performance that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
This is unusual that they would use this term in a story on the AP. He was reprimanded for boinking his intern. It says the word boinking. I can't believe they used that word in this story, but they do. Didn't they used to say that every once in a while on Cheers? Is that a word from Cheers?
Or like the dating game? Or...
Right. For making whoopee. Making whoopee in his chambers, he said, in 1968. And an attorney. And so he had sex with an intern and another attorney, or an attorney, I should say. This according to the Los Angeles Times, both were once law students of the judge. Engaging in sexual intercourse in the courthouse is the height of irresponsibility and improper behavior by a judge, the commission decided. Steiner was also criticized for attempting to help one of his sex partners get a job with the district attorney's office, this according to the Orange County Register. In addition, he was reprimanded for not recusing himself from a case that involved a friend. which you also have to do.
Right.
But he was so busy setting up future dalliances in his chambers, he didn't have time to even consider that. Judge Steiner is proud of the job he's done on the bench.
And in the chambers. I'll stand behind that.
When you say that, you have to do like a Groucho Marx face right. and a cigar. And in his chambers. And the voters agree, his campaign manager Scott Hart told the Register. That's gutsy. This judge is proud of the job he's done on the bench and under the bench.
Ask those two ladies. They're right. not complaining.
They will tell you. He gets the job done. Steiner's opponent, Schatzley, had pledged to restore integrity to the court.
She refused his invitation to the
right,
chamber.
Right. I have previous plans, she said. She said on her website that Steiner has, and I quote here, made a mockery of what our community expects of our judicial system. After Steiner's victory became apparent, she told the Register, the voters will get what they voted for, which is
another
fairly obvious.
Yes, right. And they'll like it too.
Right. All right, now here's the question I pose to you and anybody in the listening audience. Is it because this is California that they're willing to just go, oh, come on, the guy had sex in his chambers every once in a while. Come on. It's 2016. Boys will be boys. Would that work here?
I don't know. You know that a few different factors have to come into play, like the demographics of his constituents, right? What they're like, you know, if they can't see
right.
themselves doing that same thing. But in certain areas, maybe, you know, it's a little just maybe more, you know, free and easy. Who knows? But then also, too, and it's always fascinated me, is what, you know, what candidates can get away with.
Oh, yeah.
Or what they do and how it's perceived. It's almost like if you do embrace it.
Yeah.
Like if you say, like, yeah, I'm proud of it. Listen to him. I'm proud of it. And his, you know, his campaign manager says, we need to be doing more of this, you know, or who knows, that you kind of take it a little bit more where people are like, yeah, I'm for that guy because he at least is owning it, you know, or he's excited about it.
But if you're an opponent, if you're this woman, Karen Schatzley, the opponent that he beat, don't you pick up on this and run with this during, you know how anytime there's an election of any kind, you get those smear tactic ads. Don't you just say, while I'd be serving you, the people, not individually, right. as Scott Steiner has done, not one at a time, but as a whole, I'll be on the bench doing my job while he was in his chambers doing a different job.
If you didn't have an official sad person in the situation, let's say, you know, the wife or the kid, someone to complain and say that they've been wronged.
Right.
Or even, and we talked about it, Rudy Giuliani had a wife, but she wasn't popular. So maybe it was like, yeah, that's better. You wonder, and you, I just saw yesterday David Axelrod, of course, the architect of Obama's two campaigns,
yeah.
Yesterday upstairs. This would be a great question for him because you think, those campaign managers are spinning this. Well, this shows you're appealing to women, right?
Right.
This shows that you're
sure.
you're popular.
Sure it does.
You know, I mean, you've got to spin it in a certain way, and they're doing it.
The best one of these, I think, of all time, I think if you're going Hall of Fame on this sort of thing, you look at the mayor of Washington, D.C., Marion Barry,
oh.
who was convicted for crack cocaine use. He had crack cocaine, and you say, well, this is the end of Marion Barry. You don't rebound from something like this. You're the mayor of a very, very important city here in North America. You can't just be using crack cocaine. And yet he was, again, reelected by a wide margin by the people of the District of Columbia. They tended to go, oh, come on.
He's
just
one of
crack
us.
Crack cocaine. Right.
I mean, of course, back in the day. And then, of course, that mayor from Toronto who was
Rob Ford,
all manner yeah. of, you know, all of the drugs and everything, but leapfrogging fire hydrants and just a crazy guy, but still popular. So maybe people like their people a little, or maybe a lot, flawed. And maybe if you and both of those guys, Marion Barry and Rob Ford, and this judge, they kind of owned it. They're like, yeah,
yep.
just deal with it.
Right.
Vote
yeah,
for
there's
me.
Never, they don't show any moment where he was denying what he did.
Right.
He kind of just copped to it. And also, this is weird.
He didn't even say, maybe I should have taken it to the Red Roof Inn. You know?
Right. Someplace presentable. They don't even mention if he's married or has a family, which I think is pertinent to the story in some way, shape, or form. Now, here's the other question. This is obviously an elected official. He was voted in. He gets to retain being a judge. If this was just a regular business where you don't vote for somebody, but it's a hire fire type of a job, if you've got somebody on your payroll who's been caught a couple of times having sex there in the office, isn't that grounds for dismissal normally?
You would think so, especially when you're, you know, you're getting that official condemnation. You know, you're being, you know, you're penalized or whatever. I mean, it's in the file.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know. It depends on the business. You know, maybe
I guess so.
If you're working
yeah.
the Sybaris, maybe it's okay.
right. Then it's fine. All right. We need to take a break. We've got a lot to talk to you about. If you want to jump in, you know how to do it. It's 312-981-7200. You can call us there or you can text us there. Dane Neal is here sitting in for Wendy Snyder, and I'm Bill Love. You know that. It's WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill Leff, and it's Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy Snyder, who's on vacation. We're getting a lot of texts. You can call us or text us at 312-981-7200. Did you hear that creaky noise, Dane? This studio's haunted.
it did sound kind of scary.
The story said that the judge had dalliances with two women. Was that at one time or two different occasions? Mm. And does that make a difference to the way we perceive this story? I hadn't really thought about it. It doesn't say whether it was on one or two occasions. It shouldn't matter.
Well,
This is a penthouse letter.
Well, unless it makes it right. Does that make it a little more freaky? And maybe that appeals to more to a different segment of the voting population. Who
right.
knows? I think the thing is, if it's okay with the ladies.
Yes.
Like if they're not complaining.
Right.
And that's what he's saying. Like, I'm proud of it. I don't know what you do with it. You know, and you look at it. Who knows? And it's a judge situation, right? So it isn't even a politician that's, well, he's still going to vote, you know, right on this issue. This is a person that's going to have to imagine cases that come forward where there are, and you mentioned it in the last, like, yep. workplace problems, or if someone's getting sued over this. He obviously has a very a kind of broad range of acceptable activities.
Yeah.
And so he'd be more, yeah. That's the judge you want if you're in a deal like this.
Well, it's funny you say that, because one of the texts, 815, says, it's not the sex to me, but maybe the lawyer that won her cases, as we mentioned, one of the two other participants in Judge Scott Steiner's extramarital, I can't even say marital because it doesn't say in the story if he's married or not. Let's just say dalliances, since that word has come up.
Boinking, I think.
Boinking, in one of the boinking events, as they say in the story, was a lawyer. So it says it's not the sex, but maybe that the lawyer won her cases. If he's not recusing himself with friends, how impartial can he really be? And that's true, I guess, right?
Or he could say that as long as he's up front with her and then says that, of course, I've got to, you know, you're going to lose this case because it just wouldn't look good.
Right.
And if you're okay with right. that, let's get this going.
Here's a text from 269. Years ago here in Berrien County, we had two naughty judges. I rented that movie once.
Well, because, Bill, you've heard it treated like the hanging judge, remember, from the old Wild West, and now you've got the naughty judge.
Right. One was fooling around with a clerk, and the other was calling sex hotlines on the county phone system. They were both voted out. That's what I said earlier, is I wonder if, because it's California and a West Coast lifestyle, if they're a little more forgiving than we would be here in the Midwest.
It's
although
gotta be.
Our politics here in the Midwest is slightly left of center, isn't it?
Well, you think if it's Michigan outside of Detroit, it's a lot of more rural, I guess, than it would be here in Chicago, for sure, and maybe more conservative as far as the values that the people
right.
may have, and maybe they're not okay with that. But maybe that came down to, Bill, the fact that it was the clerk,
yeah,
you know, or maybe that he was, you know, wasting the company money or the county money on the chat line.
Could be,
but right. those ads are enticing. I you know that.
Sure, they are. Now, this one from 773 has to do with one of the references I made, that this reminds me in some ways of Marion Barry's situation. He was the mayor of Washington, D.C., who had a little bit of a crack cocaine problem. And you thought, well, that's the end of this man's career. But, oh, no, he was reelected then as mayor. 773 says doing drugs and having consensual sex is way different. And it is way different. But in both those cases, the parallel I was drawing was, it's something that when you're electing somebody, you're not thinking they'll be doing on the job.
Yeah, and in the place too. Because think about this: you want to have a clear mind. You want to be ready to hear the case. You know,
right.
Being a judge is not easy. You know, you got to take it all, you know, all of the information in, and you've got to make some tough decisions. And if you're thinking, I got to get this over with because, you know, Gladys is showing up in the chambers in 10 minutes, let's hurry it up.
Right.
Right. You don't want that. And
right.
I think even though he came out and said he's proud of what he did, he hasn't heard any complaints.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem. He should have said, like, let's just do this after hours or before
right.
hours.
Why not?
Not during hours.
Then it makes sense. Right. 708 says, are you kidding me? How about Rod Blagojevich? And then you mentioned Marion Barry. People are idiots. Let's go to the calls. We'll start out with Mike. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, good, Bill. How you doing?
Excellent. What are your thoughts on this judge?
How quickly people forget. How about our own president, Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
I mean, he was impeached and and reelected after having his dalliance in the Oval Office.
And I guess you could go back to John F. Kennedy, and my guess is if Bill Clinton had that sort of thing going and John F. Kennedy had that sort of thing going, probably more presidents did as well. Wouldn't you imagine?
Oh, boy. It's just, you know, it's not so much the act. It's where it took place. I mean, there has to be some respect for not only the Oval Office itself, but also a court of law, a judge's chambers.
So
take
if
it somewhere else.
If he was meeting these women at a Motel 6 somewhere on the edge of town, that's one thing. But to do it there in the judge's chambers, a little more suspect, right?
Right. Well, right. You have to. I think you have to respect the venue.
All right, so here's the other question, Mike. If somebody was up for re-election here in the state, and you can go mayor, you can go governor, you can go, let's go as high as the presidency, would that affect your voting on somebody like that, a man or a woman who you knew had this sort of behavior in their past?
I think it will bring into question their judgment and their respect for the office that they hold.
Right. I get it. Well, thank you, Mike. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Take care. Bye.
On the judgment side, I think that's kind of where you're at. Or, like, where's your priorities? Because I think we can all agree, regardless of how the voters seem to accept it or how he seems to justify it.
Right.
You just, I think in general, you can say that's not probably the best place to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? And then, you know, on the presidential side, like, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of thing. But there you have a situation where it's obvious that that is a person in a position of ultimate authority, right? The commander in chief, it's the president.
Sure.
And the influence that they may have over is, yeah, it's just a bad idea.
In every direction. Earlier, when I'm reading you this story from the AP, I used the word boinking because that was the word that they used. They said Scott Steiner, a Superior Court judge for 5 years, was censured in 2014 by the Commission on Judicial Performance for, and a quote here, boinking his intern and an attorney in his chambers. So somebody put, isn't boink, this is from 630, isn't boink a live action verb often used in Batman comics when he punches somebody? I think that's where I've heard it before.
That and blammo.
Boink, blammo, thwap.
Thwap.
Yeah, any of those. Right.
Zoink, I think zoink is in there.
Zoink is in there, yeah. You can't do any of those things to an intern or another lawyer when you're a judge.
Shouldn't be able to.
It's frowned upon. It's heavily frowned upon. All right, so some of these cannot be read, and it's a shame. I want to invite everybody in the listening audience to stop by the studio, and I'll show you the ones I can't read on the air because they're very funny. I can say bang the gavel. The judge was just playing a game of bang his gavel. I can say that. That's from 815. No, I can't do that one. Clinton was impeached during his second term. This is from 773. Clinton was impeached during his second term. We can't know if he would or wouldn't have been reelected. Well, yeah, that's obvious. You get two terms and that's it.
But still, this is a guy, you know, it wasn't a Richard Nixon situation where he just had to go off into obscurity.
Right.
And I mean, Bill Clinton is still very popular in a lot of the things that he does.
Oh, yeah.
Still a sought after speaker and in a bunch of different ways. So it didn't hurt. It didn't really hurt him. Obviously, it's something in there.
Yeah.
But he kind of, you know, he just had that sort of folksy way about him where he was able to kind of, hey, I'll just laugh it off.
Right.
You know,
the magic.
I don't know how you do it. And that's what's kind of interesting is certain people can get away with certain things depending or in whatever field that they're in.
Yeah.
And on the political side, it's what people will tolerate. And like I said, in Michigan, they wouldn't go for it. And in California, anything goes.
Then it's all right. Thanks, Dane. We'll take a quick break. Pat McDonald's going to come by after the news and tell you what movies to see and which to avoid over the weekend. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. Kim, thanks very much. I'm Bill Leff. Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy Snyder. Wendy will be back next week. She's on vacation. Our guest is Patrick McDonald. Patrick is the film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com. He's also chief guide for the Chicago Film Tour, which if you have not been on, you need to. ChicagoFilmTour.com has all the information there.
Very good.
How are you, Patrick? Nice to see you.
After that last segment, I don't want to file a motion ever again.
Right. I don't blame you. I do all not right. blame you, sir. The summer is one of the two big seasons for movies.
You have
the holiday season in December.
Yes.
And then you have the 3 months of summer. Is this one so far living up to expectations or not?
I think on the superhero side it is.
Yeah.
Both Captain America Civil War and the X-Men movie I thought were really precise forms of that genre, if I could speak professorially?
You can.
Thank you.
We prefer that you do.
So, so far so good in that category. I'm not so sure about how it's going so far. I'm not getting a feel of anything really emerging from the pack. Of course, I saw Warcraft this week.
We'll talk about that, one of the new movies.
But even the Batman v Superman thing, at least it gave some people things to talk about.
Right.
I mean, it's just the ongoing controversy.
But is there one movie, like last year, I think it was probably Jurassic World, that everybody's going, that's going to be the movie this summer. Is there one movie coming out this summer that everybody's really keeping their eye on?
I don't know. Could it be the Spielberg Big Fat Giant or no? What is BFG?
BFG.
Yes. Yes.
BFG.
Yes. I
read that to my daughters when they were little and always hoped it would one day be a movie, and it is. It'll be out later in the summer.
All right. And
is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a really good, it's a beautiful story.
Okay.
It's a really good story.
I never fully and completely 100% know.
No, it's
joking.
Real. It's, you know who wrote it?
Just like it was called Reuben S. Giant in the book form.
Exactly.
You know who wrote it? Roald Dahl, the same guy that wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, wrote this.
Classic stuff.
He's really good. I know that over at IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, they just compiled the list of their top 10 films. Now, help me with this.
This is actually the top 10 of their 250 best films. And this is ranked by everybody who visits a site and puts a rating on a film once they visit the particular page.
So it's not just critics. It's just
regular movie goers, regular folks. Fans. It's an accumulation of probably, 500 million hits over the years that IMDb has existed, and that is the go-to site for everybody who wants to look up anything having to do with movies.
Let's do a countdown from number 10.
All right.
I have to be honest. It's hard to argue with any of these 10. They're all, they've left out some classics as well.
Well, but spaces. What I find interesting is what accumulated to the top 10. So that's why I brought in the list. So number 10, sir.
Fight Club.
Don't talk about Fight Club.
That's the first rule of Fight Club.
You just broke it, Bill.
The first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club. That's a pretty well put together movie.
It is.
It's hard to argue with that.
And it's become a cultish film too. You can watch it over and over again. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. Number 9 is
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Don't talk about The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
The first rule.
That's the first rule of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
That's the first rule of The Man with No Name.
That's right. Clint Eastwood and the always great Lee Van Cleef. How can you not love him? Now, that's a really good film, but I'm surprised it would be in the top 10
of all
time. I am, too.
That's again, there's so many other candidates out there, but that just happens to be ranked the best.
Yep, yep. Number 8 on IMDb's list of the top 10 movies ever made is?
Why don't you take it, Dane?
Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King back from 2003.
Yeah.
That's the third one or the second one?
Third of the trilogy.
Okay, third of the first trilogy. Okay.
Yeah.
One of the many, a lot of the same characters you know and love in there. And what I'm noticing is, like, on the list, there doesn't seem to be a lot of comedies. And you think there's going to be things that set movies into that kind of team photo of greatness, whether it's box office, whether it's awards.
Right.
There's almost, there were some funny
moments.
And by
not a lot of comedies, Dane, there are zero comedies.
Zero. That's what I meant.
You can consider Pulp Fiction a comedy, maybe.
Well, and Frodo and Gandalf had some funny moments in Lord of the Rings.
They did. Very Laurel and Hardy.
But what makes it where just the general public loves them? Like, what are the essential ingredients to a movie that people love? I mean, we all have those movies and for different reasons, but what is it that it has to have where people say, you got to see this?
I think it's the factor of watching it over and over again. That's the commonality I see, I think, of these top 10, that people will go to these films and watch them again and again, or it strikes a chord with the type of people that go on Internet Movie Database. I don't know.
Maybe there's something to that.
Yeah.
I think there could be something to that.
Well, they're movie fans. They're movie, they have it in their DNA. So they want to represent, I guess.
Yeah. Right. You mentioned Pulp Fiction, and that came in at number 7.
Yep.
Pulp Fiction, very, very enjoyable film, no doubt about it. Number 6, and there's not a lot of older movies on the list. This is by far the oldest movie on the list. Your classics like Gone with the Wind, and The Apartment, and
Some
Like It Hot. All the movies you would expect to be on there are not, but 12 Angry Men is.
I really find that interesting because as somebody who studied film for a long time, I think I first encountered that film in the 1970s.
Yeah.
And so to see that you know, go into the internet chain and emerge in the top 10 on IMDb is quite remarkable.
And it's a departure from the rest of the list where there's so much action in every movie. If you've not seen 12 Angry Men.
Yeah, it's basically a stage play filmed.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a surprise.
That's very surprising.
Number five, the very emotional Schindler's List.
Yes.
Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List was number five.
Did you ever make out at the theater to that?
No.
Like the old Seinfeld?
No. No. Okay. No. Number four is The Dark Knight.
Yeah, well.
That's the first of the Christian Bale Batman
the second,
movies.
Second, actually. Is Batman Begins second? The Dark Knight.
Yeah, I apologize. Mm-hmm. You're right. The Godfather Part Two is number three.
Yeah.
And The Godfather Part One is number two. That's confusing, but true.
Yeah. You know, again, the Godfather movies, I think, speak to America, I guess, in power. I
don't know how you can make a better movie than The Godfather, The Godfather 2. It's flawless in every way.
I agree.
Every still, if you're watching it on television and you freeze frame it, every still is just a beautiful photograph, and the storyline is great. The director's good. Everything, just start to finish.
And some of these movies, I mean, you look at them, and they are the kind of movies that when they came out, and they still hold up to this day. Obviously, they're still on this list. But when they came out, it's almost everything in film from that day forward was a little different,
right?
Where it was like, whoa, the whole country's talking about it. The book sales take off. I mean, it was as big as they get. And there's a few of those on here, but I mean, these like changed the way people thought about things.
Absolutely.
I think the two that are on there that really changed how movies, people thought about movies are The Godfather series and Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Those
yeah.
are the two that really,
for,
I think.
For Tarantino, right? It was just changed. Like, it was, you know, and you brought back people, you know, John Travolta. Like, you had some recognizable figures in there, but it was done in such a way that had not been seen before.
Exactly.
And just launched a whole new style of filmmaking.
No question. We saved the best for last, according to IMDb, which just ranked, according to their, I can't say subscribers, people who visit IMDb.
Right.
Visitors to the website. They ranked the top 10, and the number one film of all time, according to them, IMDb, is?
The Shawshank Redemption.
It's a great movie.
It is a great movie.
I don't know that it's the best of all time, but boy, is it a good movie.
I think it's about striking a chord with people, and I think everybody who encounters that film and, you know, motivates themselves to go online to IMDb and look it up want to tell you that that is the It's a Wonderful Life of our era.
Yeah, which is one of the movies I'm most surprised isn't on here.
That's astounding when you think about it.
Give me one or maybe two that shock you the most that they're not on their top 10 list.
Oh, man. You're putting me on the spot.
Well, it's hard because you'd have to kick another one out.
Right.
But in there, like, Pat, some maybe in that top 20 or so, like ones that are notables that maybe didn't crack this list but still are there.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan, as you mentioned, of The Apartment. I just think, again, that just, to me, strikes a chord about relationships.
Yeah, it's great.
That is ongoing.
Yeah.
And even though if you watch it today, it's very dated, it still resonates as a social statement, I guess, is what you want to call it. Professorial again.
Here's the two that surprised me the most.
Yeah.
I'm surprised the first Star Wars movie, A New Hope, isn't on there. I would have been sure that would have cracked the top 10.
Yes.
And Citizen Kane is kind of a good movie, too.
Sure. But again, Kane is more of a cinemaphiles movie, but I'll definitely agree with A New Hope. I mean, that should be on
I'm
there.
I'm surprised. Dana, are there any that are glaring omissions on your behalf?
You know what? And this is crazy because it's not as consequential as so many of these, either in the topics or the style of music. But Forrest Gump was like one of the
that
best.
That would be way
that's definitely in the top, in the next 10. Okay. I think as I was going over that, yes.
So many people are texting in wondering why The Wizard of Oz isn't on there.
Gosh.
And that's true. Goodfellas, they say. How could that not be in the top 10? Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which after The Godfather, that's my other favorite movie.
Wonderful.
I just think that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing you could debate for a year.
Exactly.
There's no way to pin down the top 10.
Well, what I find fascinating about this list is of course, it's an accumulation of millions of votes.
Right.
So we're talking about, you know, this
the
is
the general
this
public.
Is, yeah, this is the yeah. general.
More people will vote for this than the presidential election in
Absolutely.
November.
Absolutely.
Are there some movies that are kind of bragging that they're in the top 100? Maybe like Cannonball Run 2? You know?
Yes. Yes, they are. A quick break and then more movie talk with Patrick McDonald. Stick around for that. It's Bill and Dane on WGN. All right, it's me, Bill Leff. Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy Snyder, and Patrick McDonald is here. Patrick is a film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com. He also is the chief guide for ChicagoFilmTour.com. Give them a call at 312-593-4455 and see all the sites in and around Chicago where your favorite movie scenes have been filmed. Patrick, you're welcome, sir. A couple of big movies are opening up this weekend.
Yep.
Warcraft is probably the biggest name of all.
Right.
You saw Warcraft. What were your impressions?
Well, interestingly enough, Warcraft just beat the record for opening weekend in China.
It did.
Yes. It beat Fast and Furious 7. This is the World of Warcraft has been an online game since 1994. Either of you played it or been... Oh, you
Dane,
have.
Dane, you have?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're in the demo, sir.
Well, no, but I think this is genius. As they sit around those big tables and think of how they're going to spend hundreds of millions to create
right.
and give these films a chance for success.
Right.
And you look at... You could do the Son of and the Number Two and the whatever. Or you can go with some of the superhero franchise that already have a built-in fan base.
Right. Yeah.
And then you look at like the Lego movie. Okay, it's a popular toy. And so Warcraft, you have a game,
yes.
right? But it already has, you know, millions of fans.
100 million accounts have been made for World of Warcraft.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was built in, my friend. You're exactly right.
Are there big stars in this movie?
No. Nobody, I don't think there's a recognizable star. I mean, I didn't write down the cast list, but I'm sure there's an up-and-comer.
It's such a risk to spend the kind of money that they've spent on this and not have any kind of marquee draws. I guess the draw for the marquee is just the game itself.
Exactly.
The movie.
Well, exactly. And they're heavily made up, too. All of them are in fancy garb. And
yeah.
If you look at the money that A Lord of the Rings has made, you know, that whole genre, it seems to work. If it's done well, that whole kind of fantasy situation and the ancient orcs. And Bill, would you want a celebrity? Would you want, you know, Vince Vaughn dressed up as like a giant orc?
I mean,
do you need that?
No. Nope. That would repel.
Or a wizard as
Al Pacino. I don't want that.
The concept itself is the star, which is
right.
Now in the game, remarkable. When you play the game, is that the one where all the characters are blurry? Is that Warcraft where they're blurry? There's some game where everything's blurry.
Okay, so I haven't played it in a while. But it's basically, it's kind of a
build. Oh, I'm thinking of Minecraft. Kevin helped me out with that.
Yeah,
it's Minecraft.
I do not.
That movie would be blurry.
Pat, if they ever come up with a Minecraft movie, which Minecraft and Maxwell, he was just here. They love it. But it's nice. It's elevator music playing and like very slow building with very little going on.
Oh, all
but
right.
it's super popular. But for Warcraft, it's a building game, like armies and you're battling things.
Yeah,
and
right.
Wizards and magic.
Now, is there personalities to the characters in the game itself? Again, or do you create the personalities?
Again, it's been a long time. You could probably name them. You could be like Pat the Great or the the Invincible.
Yes,
but both. I don't know. Yeah, if there's maybe like that. I just know I haven't played it in a long time.
Okay,
but I know that. But I liked it when I had time for that.
Oh,
exactly.
Is there much of a storyline, or is it just what you get in the video game?
I, not being a gamer, I have to say that. In fact, the first hour I was tracking with him. The second hour got a little vague.
Yeah.
But I think people who know and love the game will understand it completely. And believe me, the applause was deafening at the end. At
was
the preview,
it really?
So.
Yeah.
Well, the object of the game, at least as far as I had played it, is you build up your kind of your castle, your civilization. You get bigger. There's people attacking you. You attack other people, and you just try to expand.
Oh.
And become more powerful. I don't know
That's
if there
a
was
good
a
storyline,
story, you know, like save the princess or anything.
Oh, all right. All right. So what did you think?
I gave it 3 out of 5 because I love the atmosphere of it, but again, I couldn't track with it. So I don't know if outside moviegoers like myself will come in and say, well, let's go see Warcraft and get anything out of it. But I obviously the 100 million people who signed up the accounts go in and want to see it. So,
All right. So Warcraft getting a good review from you.
I'm giving it 3 out of 5.
Now You See Me 2. I saw the original a couple of years ago.
Yes.
I thought it was okay. What did you think of the sequel?
Well, you know, here's the problem with the sequel. These guys can do no wrong. And since the magic is done by digital effects.
These are all illusions. It's
these
a team
are
of illusionists.
A team of superheroes, like they're magicians.
Right.
And they're underground and they're kind of rogue and that sort of thing. But the problem is they're just too heroic. There's no tension in the movie whatsoever as to whether they're going to come out on top. They always do. They always will. It doesn't matter that Daniel Harry Potter Radcliffe is the villain in this.
Oh,
you know. He's still going to be defeated.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those. This is like one of those waste of talent movies like Bewitched. Did you ever see the film version of Bewitched?
Yeah, with Nicole Kidman and Will
Ferrell. One of the biggest waste of talent movies.
Yeah.
And they have this amazing cast: Jesse Eisenberg, Mark Ruffalo, Woody Harrelson, Daniel Radcliffe, Morgan Freeman,
yeah.
and the great Dave Franco, who I interviewed for this. And this is a guy who's coming out of his brother's shadow and is establishing a career.
Mm-hmm.
He loves comedy,
mm-hmm.
so he's this is part of his arc. But 1.5 out of 5.
Oh, that's not good
well,
at all.
Well,
I think one of the things that they should look at, maybe just to keep it fresh, is have some of these big superhero movies where the villains win. I mean, you loved, because I think the great thing about, remember the movie Rocky,
yeah.
was that he lost.
Right.
It was one of those things, that, just to keep people on their toes.
Spoiler alert.
Exactly.
Oh.
People have not seen it. It came out in 1976.
Why is it Rocky on the top 10?
Right. Exactly. All right, so not a good showing there.
Not
for
a good
now you
showing
see me
for the too. Sequel there. And presenting Princess Shaw. Now, this is amazing. This movie is simply amazing. This is about the online phenomenon, mostly YouTube, I think, where people put their songs on, they'll do an a cappella song on YouTube.
Yeah.
Now, there's an artist in Israel. His name is Kudiman. And he takes these snippets
yeah.
and he finds other musicians around the blogosphere.
Yeah.
Not blogosphere, the atmosphere, the online atmosphere. And he marries these instruments with these a cappella songs. So Princess Shaw is actually Samantha Montgomery. She was a working class girl from New Orleans, worked in a old folks home, and she'd come home and her hobby was taking her little songs. She's not a musician or anything. She just sings them into YouTube.
Yeah.
And they were soulful and much like Amy Winehouse's
oh,
best
really?
Ballads, you know?
And this is, I'm out of time, Patrick, but okay. this is a documentary,
yes.
correct?
It is. Four right. out of five. This is my pick of the weekend.
Presenting Princess Shaw.
Yes.
That's the one that you like the
yes,
most.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's Patrick McDonald. You want to visit his website. That's HollywoodChicago.com. He's also the chief tour guide at ChicagoFilmTour.com, 312-593-4455 has all your information.
And one more plug, my one band, more. The Telepaths, at Phyllis Musical Inn, July 2nd. You start off your July 4th weekend right with
Excellent.
The Telepaths.
Thank you, Patrick. Back after this, it's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Oh, Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder, who's usually here, is not here. She's away for a couple of days. Dane Neal is sitting in. We know Dane from several different places. AccessAppetite.com, The Dane Neal Show, which is heard on WGN+. Usually, Dane, when you're here on the show, on our show or on the station, you're talking about food, and we will discuss food a little bit, but we're talking about other things certainly as well. But you brought something up to me between the shows that I think bears some repeating. And this is for anybody who enjoys pies, which I believe is everybody on the planet. What do we need to know about pies?
Well, you should know that they're always good. The pies always come
pie
in peace.
Pie is always good.
Yes, pies always come in peace. And when it comes to pies over at Joe Stone Crab is one of Chicago's favorite restaurants.
Hands down.
And it's hard to say in a place with thousands of really awesome favorite restaurants out there. But Joe's is, of course, the lineage from Joe's Stone Crab down in Miami, the mm-hmm. history, the iconic restaurant down there. And then, of course, coming up here and having it, prime steaks, seafood, and, of course, the Stone Crab that people love. But the thing that they do during the summer is they do their seasonal fruit pies.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been participating in that for the last at least probably 5 or 6 years. By
supplying them blueberries?
Supplying them, right. Yeah, giving them the very best blueberries from Michigan to mm-hmm. make their seasonal pies. And we always kick it off. They do it from June all the way through December. So June is Michigan blueberry pie, and it supports. Here's the one thing that's cool about it, too. It's called Pie It Forward. So there's a clever play on words, which, of course, we can appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got great pies, and then you've got a great cause where a dollar from every slice of these pies goes to different charities each and every month. So June is Michigan blueberry pie, and, of course, our true blue blueberries that that we have. And you can go to accessappetite.com and learn a little bit more about those. And the Children's Place.
Mm-hmm.
Not the store, but childrensplace.org here in Chicago that helps kids.
The charity.
Yep, on a number of different levels, whether it's illness, poverty, homelessness. They attack those issues and help kids in need in a bunch of different ways. Then July, so that's blueberries.
Mm-hmm.
We like those. So
for
definitely,
June.
For June. So get out there and enjoy those. July is Door County Cherries.
Oh, also good.
Yeah, that's pretty
Not
good,
bad.
Too. Cherries Jubilee Pie, and it's that supports the Greater Chicago Food Depository. August is Peach Huckleberry Pie.
Love the huckleberry. Not a fan of the peach, but I could scrape that to the side if I needed to.
So you just
right?
ask for light peach, right? Or peach on the side,
right? Right. I would do that. A sidecar of peach, and then not eat that.
Right. The sidecar.
I would just have the huckleberry.
Very nice. The Carrie Wood Family Foundation benefits from that coming up to September. It's mostly raspberry pie, so mostly raspberries with a little bit of blueberries, a dash of. So
that's
you can
still
see
good. Yeah.
Some ways to do that. October. Guess what it is.
Pumpkin pie.
Your favorite, your
Would
absolute
it be pumpkin
favorite.
Pie? Yes. Yeah.
Pumpkin chiffon pie.
Oh. Right. And then, of course, November is dressing pie.
Sweet potato pecan pie.
Sweet potato pecan pie, right.
That supports Bears Care. And then December is the final one supporting Special Olympics. One of my favorite pies and also my favorite, I guess, animals or members of the Wild Kingdom, the turtle pie.
And I know you're too embarrassed to say this, so I'll say it for you. They've talked to you about having a pie that tastes like you and calling it Sweetie Pie. I think that would be a nice thing.
Yes.
Why don't you agree to that? Why won't you agree to that?
It's the merchandising.
Is that what it is?
Right. Like I said, the action figures, the lunch boxes, the
it's
whole
too
thing.
Expensive. Yep. It's too expensive. All right. So go to Joe's.
Yeah, they're over at Grand.
A few blocks away, block and a half away.
Grand Avenue, Joe's, Stone Crab, Seafood, Prime Steak. Go there, say hi to John and the team, and get yourself some blueberry pie.
That is, without a doubt, we took our daughters there on Mother's Day. My wife and I took Reese and Kylie there for Mother's Day. They had never been there, and we said, this is going to be one of your all-time favorite restaurants, and it is, and there's a
what
drink.
What did you guys get?
We went with the crab, strangely enough. We all had different types of crab.
Okay.
There's a drink there that is a key lime martini, which is just as manly as it sounds. My wife always, when I order a drink like that, does that thing where she puts the napkin over her head so that people at other tables can't recognize her.
Well, because she could have poked in the eye with the umbrella from that one.
Right, right. But it's, I mean, not only is there a lot of key lime flavor in the drink, but then they put like, it's like a pie crust around the rim of the glass. It's really, really good. It's really, really good.
That sounds awesome.
It's the drink that kept me out of the service. I had a couple of those before I went in to enlist, and they went, yeah, we're good. We have plenty of soldiers. Thank you very much. Speaking of food, you and I started talking about something during the break that we thought, well, let's share this with everybody because it bears sharing. We do a thing. My wife and I have been doing this thing for a couple of years now that I highly recommend to people. If you've never tried this, trust me, this is a good time. And then I just found out that you've done this in the past as well. And here's what it is. We get in the car with absolutely no destination in mind.
Is it always like an early day on the weekend kind of thing?
No.
Where you give yourself a lot of period of time, or is it like, hey, in a half an hour, I got to be someplace?
More times than not, we'll do it on a Saturday night.
Okay.
But we have done it on weeknights, but it plays better because of the time allotment. It plays better on a weekend. We just get in the car, and all we know is we're heading either north, south, or west. We can't head east because we live near the lake. And we would drown.
Right,
so after a couple of very bad incidents where we drove into the lake, we said, let's
just... You just didn't get anywhere.
Right.
Like, oh, not again.
So not only are we still hungry, but we're waterlogged and the car is ruined.
In need of rescue.
Yes.
Yeah.
It didn't play out well. So we just say, let's go in that direction. And we do. And then we just drive until we find a restaurant that looks interesting to us. And we did it this past Saturday. We ended up in Mundelein at a place called the Park Street Tavern or Park Street Tap. I don't remember, but Park Street something. It was outstanding. And then after dinner, about a mile and a half away, is a frozen custard place that looks like it's from the 1950s called Greg's Custard, where we were the oldest people there. Everybody there were teenagers. Teenagers from the 50s. There was a whole 50s motif.
You went to the time warp.
A lot of kids named Buzz and a lot of girls named Mary Jane were there. And that was outstanding. But you've done the same thing where you say, I don't know where I'm going. I'm just going to drive somewhere and then I'll know when I'm there.
Now hearing you describe it fully, right, the intentions and the intended outcome, maybe I haven't done exactly that. But that whole sense of adventure that makes you guys so fun is you just get in the car and you kind of head out and you're looking ultimately for a place to sit down, have a bite to eat, maybe enjoy the surroundings.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you before I mentioned mine, like, do you guys... Is there times where, because it's almost like, let's make a deal, right? You're like, that one looks pretty good. Well, let's chance it. It could be 30 miles to the next place, or do you use the aid of a GPS? Or
several times, including last Saturday, we would pass a place and we'd say, that looks really good. Let's go another 5 or 10 minutes, and if nothing beats it, we'll turn around and go there.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And especially in the summer months, when you want to eat outside, which we did last weekend, they had a nice outdoor dining area, so that's a huge plus. So if we see that, they get a bonus star for that. But I'm telling you, I don't remember it ever not working. Every time we've done it a bunch over the last 4 or 5 years, it always ends in a very happy experience
well,
for us.
Well, mine usually, the couple times that we've done that, it ended in an interesting experience, not always completely happy, but not tragic, right? We never ran into the lake. So this one was, and it really stemmed from not necessarily wanting to get something to eat, but just, hey, we're not ready to go home yet. And this is where a friend of mine, Dave, this would have been the mid-90s, we were at the Star Plaza Theater watching, now I guess they can be introduced as Hall of Famers, Cheap Trick.
Oh, right? Yeah, sure.
And so when the concert ended, we're there, and you know where that place is. It's
in Merrillville,
it's
Indiana.
It's in Merrillville, Indiana. And so we got out, and instead of doing the smart thing, the right thing, the proper thing of heading home back to the Chicagoland area, we decided, like, let's just head the other way.
Oh.
I think the Bill Left sense of adventure kicked in, and we're like, maybe there'll be something fun this way.
Yeah.
Without, and this was before either common sense or the internet could stop you. Or,
there's no room for either.
No. So we headed for a long time, and as you keep going, you get to a certain point where you're like, we've gone a long way. We know there's nothing. If we turn around, it's a long way back. You never know what's around the next corner.
So true.
So we could run into, you know, fun and adventure.
Right.
So we ended up finding the only place that really appeared. We ended up in Rensselaer, Indiana, at a bar called the Recovery Room that was across the street from a hospital, in the middle of what turned out to be like, I think it was like a KKK meeting at the bar. Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. It was one of those things. So we were just like, from an interest standpoint, this was a unique experience that will not be replicated.
Right.
And then we turned around and headed home.
But that's, if you go in with the attitude of worst case scenario is I get a story out of it. One of the times we did it, and I don't remember the name of the restaurant and I feel so bad, but we went in and there was a guy singing in the restaurant. And despite that, we went in anyway. It was a Saturday night and there's a guy singing. And he did that thing that Bill Murray used to do when he was Nick the Lounge Singer in Saturday Night Live, where he went from table to table and kind of personalized it to every table.
Hey, looking good, you guys.
It was exactly that attitude. And we were the only ones, my wife and I, were the only ones who found that funny or ironic. Everybody else was eating it up. Like, they loved the fact that this guy, it was like a 3D show. He was jumping right off the stage and coming to their table. And it was as cheesy could be. But that's what made it fun.
Was he doing the Elvis Tom Jones, you know, scarf around the thing, maybe leaving that, dangling it, wrapping it around your date's neck?
I just remember a collar on his, it wasn't a tuxedo, but it was a similar jacket that was so pointy that I said to Terry, my wife, if he comes near us, put glasses on because he'll poke your eye out with the collar. Right. Very, very dangerous. Have you ever tried this? Have you ever done exactly what Dane and I are speaking of, where you just get in the car, you have absolutely no idea where you're heading, you just know you want some food, and you've never been to that area, so you drive there. Has it worked for you? We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, it's me, Bill Leff, and Wendy is off for a couple of days. Filling in today is Dane Neal. You know Dane from AccessAppetite.com, his website, or his show that's on WGN Plus, The Dane Neal Show. We're talking about a phenomenon that I didn't invent, and in talking to you between shows, I realized that you've done this yourself, and I've thrown it out to listeners to see if they've done it, where you just get in the car, maybe with your wife or your husband or your family or just neighbors, or your clergyman, or your orthodontist, or somebody you once
anyone you feel
saw at a mall,
you feel comfortable with, safe with, you maybe want to have some fun with,
right?
You feel it'll be a positive.
Sometimes
experience.
You surprise them. You come to their house, you blindfold them, you throw them in the trunk, and you go, I don't know where we're going, but we're going to get there. And then you just find a restaurant, you just find something you've never experienced before, and more times than not, it's good.
When you talked a little bit before we got here about the kind of supper club phenomenon that happens, you know,
love it.
In Wisconsin, that is the kind of thing where there are places or those diners, you know, and we've talked, you know, at length about, you know, diners, drive-ins and dives and and the kind of stuff that he does. And there are so many great places out there on the food side that are really, I think, worthy of being those destinations where you can head to. But how do you keep that mystery, that sense of mystery, right? Where it could be a pleasant surprise, where you don't already know where you're going.
Yeah.
Because you could have, I mean, you've been lucky, other than, of course, the lake trips, but you've been lucky that you've had a positive experience, or are just the expectations reasonable?
It's a little bit of both. And it's funny that you mentioned the supper clubs, because the Wisconsin experience is totally different. We've done this a half a dozen or seven or eight times, where the same principle, we know we're heading north, so we get to Wisconsin. Now, there's this place, they call Wisconsin the land of 1,000 supper clubs for a good reason. You'll be driving, and even though it's 2016 where you're driving, all of a sudden you'll take a turn, and it's 1963, and you have no idea how it happened. So a couple of years ago, my wife and I were driving through Wisconsin in the same kind of a thing. We don't know where we're going.
Not always advised.
It's no. I guess it could be dangerous.
It's like I've broken down. Where are you? I'm not sure.
I don't know. I know. I'm on an adventure. I'm in North America is all I can tell you. So we take a turn. We decided on that particular quest, we were going to drive from where we live in Evanston to Milwaukee, but we were going to go all along the lake. So that's what we're doing. So we come across this bend, we turn it, and then all of a sudden there's this supper club called Hobnob. And again, it's the 1950s. It looks like the Rat Pack would be having lunch there at this place, Hobnob. We didn't go there that day, but we made a mental note. We went back a couple months later. Now it's one of our favorite restaurants. We go there all the time now.
You know, you look at all the – when that was the norm, those kind of restaurants and supper clubs, and they were everywhere. You look at the ones that had to be like pretty – to slash really, really good to be able to stand the test of time,
sure,
kind of generate and keep enough of a local clientele, because now that's like one of the hottest things.
Right. Is that retro feel? Yep. All right, let's go to your calls and your texts. We're at 312-981-7200. Let's start out with June. June, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yeah, my father used to do exactly the same thing, just put us in the car, drive to some unknown destination, and we'd stop and we'd have lunch or dinner. Was, and you're exactly right. You're just a time warp into another era, another time. And sometimes my mom would make fried chicken and potato salad, and we'd find a nice little cubby thing off the road, and we'd stop and we'd have our picnic.
And isn't that fun?
Yeah, it is. It is. We did that with our children, not as much as my parents did, though.
Well, and June, you knew that, you know, you didn't necessarily know where you're going once you started, but did you have any kind of like heads up that you were going to be taking a trip, or did he just like wake you up out of the bunk bed and say like, get up, get in the car, we're going?
Exactly. If it was a Sunday, we'd go to church first and we'd just get in the car after church and go. If it was Saturday, he'd just load us up and say, we're going. He didn't say where or when.
That's beautiful. I love that. I'm glad you continue the tradition. Right. Thank you, June. Have a great day. Okay. Take care. Let's get Jeff in on this as well. Hey, Jeff, it's WGN. Did you do this too?
Yeah, we did the same thing, and actually Hobnob is one of our favorite places, too.
Oh, that's great.
We live in Milwaukee. We headed west. So in between Madison and Milwaukee, there's a Indian mound system, so we stopped there first.
Yeah.
We knew we were going to be gone, so we packed all our stuff with us. And we went to Madison. Then from Madison, we went to Cave of the Mounds. And from Cave of the Mounds, we went to Mineral Point. And I think in between there, I always heard about Dickeyville Grotto.
Yeah.
You know, because it's where the bears practice,
right?
Right here. So I said, well, let's go to Dickeyville. So we went to Dickeyville. Oh, my God. So we went to Dickeyville. Then after that, we just kept on going west, and we ended up at Field of Dreams.
Oh, really? In Iowa?
I thought you were going to say we ended up in South Dakota.
Well, that's a haul, though, all the way to the Iowa Field of Dreams. That's a long haul.
It was great. I think it was a little bit after the movie came out, and they had just opened the field, and it was like going to a cathedral.
Wow.
Yep. It's a good time. Jeff, thank you. Have a good weekend. Take care. All right. So again, I highly recommend this. I know in a day and age where everything needs to be planned down to the second, you go, I don't think we could pull that off.
You can't even buy a pair of shoes now. Like my wife will be looking up, is this a good deal? I want a price match. You know, and you have your phone that tells you everything to just give it all away and especially take hours hoping you have enough gas to get back.
Right.
I think that's pretty cool.
Oh, it feels so good. All right. Here's what we're going to do. A quick break. Steve has the news and then a lot more show. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Tom Skilling joins us now. Looking better than ever.
Steve, how are you?
And how is the fitness thing going?
Oh, my word. I'm aching in places, Steve. I didn't know the human body could ache. I work with this trainer because I don't know what to do with these stupid machines. But he grins at me. I ask him in what sort of torture facility this equipment was developed.
There's a lot less of Tom, but still plenty of his forecast.
You can tell us when the storm's going to hit. You can save us all from imminent destruction, but you can't figure out how to set the ramp on a treadmill.
No, all I can tell you, Steve, they're yanking at something that hasn't been answered for because...
Hear about the day ahead with Skilling's Weather. Weekday mornings on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Attention. Are you overwhelmed by student loan debt? Are you struggling with student loan payments? Were you taken advantage of by your school? You are not alone. Call 844-4-LOAN-LAW to consult for free with an experienced consumer lawyer. The lawyers at Langone Batson will give you valuable information on loan forgiveness, loan consolidation, and loan repayment plans. In some cases, your loans can be completely discharged if you are defrauded by your school. Call now at 844-4-LOAN-LAW to get help. 844-4-LOAN-LAW or visit studentloanlaw.pro. That's studentloanlaw.pro. Attorney advertisement.
What defines a legend? Is it the rivals?
Will Power, Sebastian Bourdais, Tony Kanaan.
Start those engines!
Or is it the rivalry?
What an incredible move up the hairpin!
What the hell just happened?
Oh, and you saw the contact!
IndyCar.
gone. The racing.
Bring this baby home.
The Verizon IndyCar Series. The legend continues at the Road America Grand Prix, June 23rd to 26th. Get tickets, roadamerica.com.
Okay, it is summertime here in Chicago, and we all want to get healthy and lose some weight, right? Did you know that the type and variety of bacteria in our guts play a huge part in the effectiveness of any weight loss plan? It's true. It's all true. Studies have shown that a healthy and diverse bacteria composition contribute to weight loss. You need to take a probiotic. Not just any probiotic, though. Do what Wendy's done. Do what I've done. Go with the pioneers of the probiotics category, and that would be the Natron Company. Natron is producing pharmaceutical-grade probiotics. Their formulation and production is under strict regulation, ensuring that you receive the absolute best probiotic in the whole world. Take the Natron 90-day risk-free challenge. Take it from me. You'll see and you'll feel the difference immediately. There's no risk in trying Natron probiotics either. They offer you a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's how confident they are that their products give results. Order right now. Here's what you get. Free two-day shipping. Call 866, the number 4, Natron, N-A-T-R-E-N. That's 866, the number 4, Natron. Or log on to Natron, N-A-T-R-E-N, Natron.com, and use the promo code WGN for the special offer. All right, it's news time right now. It's 1:30, and this news report is sponsored by Penny Mustard Furnishings. Here is Steve Bertrand.
Just after his meeting at the White House with Bernie Sanders, President Obama released a video endorsing Hillary Clinton in the Democratic race for president. He says, "I don't think there's ever been someone so qualified to hold this office." Donald Trump has gathered potential donors and party leaders for a meeting in New York. RNC Chairman Reince Priebus and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, a Trump supporter, are among those in attendance. And a major credit rating agency has downgraded Illinois' rating to 2 levels above junk status. Moody's cites the political gridlock that has prevented the state from getting a balanced budget for more than a year. We'll check your money, sports, traffic, and weather, all next on WGN.
Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy Snyder, who's on vacation for a couple of days. You know, it's never too early to start planning for retirement. Hands down, whenever you start, you should have started 6 months earlier. Art Miller is here. He's the president of Capital Preservation Strategies. And Art, anytime I see the word president, I always assume the word presumptive precedes it. But you're not the presumptive president. You are the president.
That's what they've told me.
Good. That's good. Okay. That's very good news. What I said, I hope, is true. People always talk about you can never start too early for retirement, but that's not just a saying. That's real.
No, it's a fact. Unfortunately, as Americans, we're faced with a very different outlook on retirement than our parents, and too many people have faced. And I used to see those newspaper articles: your 401k is now a 201k.
Yeah.
And since the year 2000, we've had 4 very negative years in the economy, which has devastated many people's retirement. Mm-hmm. Plus, people are living longer. Pensions have pretty much disappeared. So they face a lot of challenges looking forward to putting enough money away to have a secure retirement.
The whole thing has changed so much. And, of course, you look to your parents for advice on so many different topics. And I remember hearing, like, oh, just get a good job, work there for 30-plus years, yep, get a pension, and then you're done. I mean, that's all you need to know. And, obviously, that's changed so much. And so your parents haven't experienced the same thing that maybe, you know, adults in the workforce now. And probably it's going to be different for kids as well, right, where you just don't see – you just don't see that same kind of stability in the workforce, right? You see people changing, and it's tough to save money.
You know, you're absolutely right. You know, they used to talk about the three-legged retirement stool. You had Social Security, pensions, and your savings. Well, Social Security just went through a major change last November with the bipartisan Budget Act, where I think, unfortunately, the Obama administration was convinced to take a benefit out that they called unintended, where it really wasn't. It was an auxiliary benefit. So in other words, you could sort of glom on to a spousal benefit and let your benefit and your spouse's own benefit earn deferred credits for 4 years between the ages of 66 and 70, which would boost your ultimate benefit. But they removed that, and now unless you were 66 by April and the youngest member of a couple 62 by last December, it's gone. I'm hoping a new administration brings it back. Plus, pensions have pretty much disappeared.
Yep.
That boy, that's true, isn't it? Yeah. Those days are almost gone.
Yeah, it stinks because you look back into the 80s, if you can remember back that far, and I've been you know, read to about it. I'm much too
young. You're far too young to know firsthand, right? Right. But your grandfather probably told you about it.
We've all seen the documentary.
He rode with Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you had about 85% of the population in corporate America, with medium-sized companies and larger, all offered pensions. Now we're down below right around 15%. That's about it, and it's dropping each year.
You don't see companies. I mean, there's a lot of them that don't offer even a 401ks. A lot of them don't offer health insurance for the most part. I mean, it's changed absolutely completely. So what can people do like now? Of course, they can't depend on the advice of their parents, but they can depend on your advice.
Or can they?
Right.
Or can
they?
Are you here to trick us?
Well, that's what my wife says. Or can they? Believe that, but yeah. We have that debate, you know, 24 hours a day. That's another subject. But what they can do is really, you know, an old financial adage we used to use when it was part of a fee-based team was you pay yourself first. Regardless of everything else, you earmark a certain amount of money to put away each month from your paycheck. And the larger, the better. And I wouldn't rely on just a company plan. If you have a company plan that's a 401k, or if you're in the medical or education markets, you have a 403b. If you're with the city, you've got a 457 plan. Besides that, you can't rely just on their choices. If you have your own, or you should start your own IRA, it's good to do that as well. So you have a little bit more flexibility.
Here's my question about what you just said. And I know that in theory, what you just said is a great thing, that every month I'm going to set aside $300, $500, $800 and pay myself and set that aside. However, with the economy being as rough and as unstable as it's been over the last decade or so, so many people, myself included, didn't have that money. And if you're putting a kid or through to college, a kid or two through college, that made it even harder.
Absolutely.
I would love to have done that every month, but there just wasn't any extra money aside to do it. So what do you do then?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, Bill. So many people are faced with that precise situation.
Yeah.
And I always believe, and I still do, that it's never too late, that whatever state you're in, if your kids are now gone, you should have a little bit more cash flow, and now you need to start squirreling that away.
But whatever you can, do it.
Or if you can just find someone to pay that money for you.
Right.
Yeah,
you know, right.
Knock
right.
over
that
a bank.
Be better.
You know,
right.
You can get
I need
away
a sugar daddy.
Right.
What are your stances on sugar daddies? Are you for them or against them?
Oh, I've always been for them. In fact, I went to college studying to be a gigolo, so I studied gigology.
I didn't know that was a major.
Oh,
that's fantastic.
It
the workplace has changed, Bill.
Boy, has it ever.
And in Western Pennsylvania, that's all they have for entertainment.
I didn't know that.
Oh, absolutely.
What about Social Security? Now, I know that people always go, I don't even think we're going to get, by the time we're old enough to collect Social Security, I don't even think it's going to be there. Is it going to be there?
You know, my best guess is that it will be, because I think there'd be a real revolution in this country. The issue is, and this started back in the Reagan administration, and it was followed by the Clinton administration. They knew their advisors. You know, none of these presidents are economic experts, so their advisors told them that Social Security was in trouble.
Yeah.
And one of the main reasons Social Security was in trouble back when Reagan was president in 83 was the fact that we were coming. The baby boomer generation. And when Roosevelt's administration created it in 35, nobody knew back then that we were coming.
Right.
You know, and so life expectancy was only age 65, so they really didn't even have to pay off. But now,
isn't that something?
Now.
That's true, though.
Yeah.
You're not kidding. That's
no,
true.
I'm not. I know it sounds crazy,
right,
but it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And now longevity is well into your 80s. The fastest growing segment of the population actuarially are people over 100.
Yep.
So the answer is just to kill people off sooner.
Right. What can we do to kill people off sooner?
You die early, and that's one of the things, you know, I talk about in
the
social
security seminars.
So the
best thing for you is to die early. Let's
die
be
soon.
Honest.
Walk in front of a bus, and you have no more problems.
Oh, no. For those who don't make that choice.
That's not good at all. That's not good at all. And then this is sad but true also. Yeah. There's a lot of people who believe you can retire and live fairly comfortably on Social Security, and that's not easy to do.
No. You know, once again, backing up, when Roosevelt's administration created it, it was only intended to give people a leg up.
Yep.
But what's become unfortunate and more dire is because pensions have disappeared, we're living longer, the economy has not cooperated in the last 15 years with four negative years, we've become more reliant on Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when clients come in to see me, my best advice, and this always depends on their circumstances, if you can, try to make yourself wait to age 70 to earn those delayed credits so you've got a larger benefit.
Do you have, I mean, are you able to talk with them and kind of figure out, like, what do you want your lifestyle to be? Because a lot of times in their older years, you know, people will kind of downsize, you know, or you could explain to them, hey, yes, if you live off of the grid and you're Ed Begley Jr., mm-hmm. you can live comfortably as Ed Begley Jr.
I can't even say it. Residual checks coming in.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. do you have where you kind of say, like, well, here's what you want to experience? I know it's tough to kind of predict the future as far as what things will cost, but you say, like, for this lifestyle, you're going to have to save this much.
Yeah, well, we've developed software that does that, you know, with certain degrees of accuracy, because you have to, and one of the things I teach is that you have to build inflation into it. So we use 3.2%. So if you tell me you want a lifestyle where you need, say, $50,000 a year, you've got $30,000 coming in from Social Security, maybe you're lucky enough to have a $10,000 pension, so you've got $40,000, well, we've got a $10,000 gap to fill in. So we look at your savings, what will that generate? How much of that $10,000 gap do you want guaranteed? How much do you care if it goes up or a little or goes down a little bit each month?
Right. And it's one thing to survive, but some people are like, I want to, you know, cruise around the world, or I want to take that one vacation.
Well, we're always told during our golden years, that's the time we get to explore the world and stuff like that. But so many people realize once they hit that age, they don't have the money to do it.
That's
so
right.
There's got to be a way to fix that. Art Miller is here. He's the president of Capital Preservation Strategies. You want to go to cpstrategies.net for more information. We'll continue this. And if you want to jump in, we're already getting texts and calls. 312-981-7200. You can text us there. You can call us there. It's Bill Leff and Dane Nealon for Wendy Snyder on WGN. We're talking financial planning and retirement with Art Miller. He's the president of Capital Preservation Strategies. You want to go to cpstrategies.net. It's right there on your internet. It's Bill Leff and Dane Nealon is sitting in for Wendy Snyder. Who needs your services? More than anybody, who should be your clients?
I would say anyone who's 50 and older, who's just starting to think about retirement, wondering if they're going to have enough money to retire and how they're going to accomplish that. Because I think, unfortunately, we've had a couple of very good years in the economy, and that tends to make people forget what might be coming. We tend to have corrections every 6-7 years.
You would almost think, or I would anyway, that it would be the opposite. It would be during down times that people would realize, I got to figure out the future. But it's when things are good that people tend to realize that, huh?
Well, they forget. You know, it's like my mother, God bless her soul. She used to get her stock tips, you know, at the beauty parlor.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't really help anyone. And, you know, one of the things.
Buy Clairol. Okay,
yeah, really.
I'll buy Clairol.
Exactly. A little hair coloring and some good stocks.
Yep.
But, you know, one thing that I see when people come in to see me, I always ask them what their core financial priorities are. Is it preservation, income, growth, liquidity, or passing money on to heirs?
Mm-hmm.
And 80 or 90% of them tell me it's either preservation or income. And yet when I look at their picture, they've got 80, 90% all in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And so when surprises come along, meaning we have downturns, they're not prepared for them. So one of the things we look at is trying to get their picture match the reality. And they need not only a strong offense, but a strong defense, just like the Bears used to have.
Oh, we're going way back.
Yeah.
We're going way, way back on that. Is it a sound thing if you're talking retirement and retirement savings, having that money in the market, in the stock market, is that a good move or not a good move?
Well, you need, as I say, a healthy balance.
Yeah.
And we tend to use, when Markowitz created asset allocation theory and won the Pulitzer Prize back in about 58, one of the side theories that came out of it was something, was age-weighted allocation, which was the rule of 100. So you subtract your age from 100. If you're 60, it means you keep 40% in growth of the market, and about 60% should be in something that's preserved and can also grow some and provide some income.
Yep. Very, very good. Yeah. We've got some texts coming in. If you want to text us, do that at 312-591-7200. Here's a good one. This is from 630-ART. I have a pension with the post office. How safe am I and how lucky am I?
Well, probably safe and lucky are two good words, because the post office has got one of probably at this point the more secure pensions. How that will hammer out in the future, no one can say, but count yourself lucky to have it.
It's usually the union jobs that have kept with the pensions, right?
That's right.
Is that pretty much how it runs down? Yeah. Okay. Can you imagine, this is from another 630, can you imagine them getting rid of Social Security while spending what they do on defense, and for that matter, the amount of money that they accidentally misplaced, the government, people would be outraged. What would happen, hypothetically, if they made the announcement, hey, we've had the Social Security program in place for a little while, it's not working anymore, sorry? That wouldn't sit well with people, would it?
No, I think you'd have everybody leaving the country.
Yep.
I mean, it's a promise that was made by Franklin Roosevelt in 35, and people have just gotten dependent on it. And as I said, you know, in the earlier segment, even more dependent on it, as pensions have disappeared.
Yeah.
And we're living longer. So I would say it would be political suicide for anybody to try and tamper significantly with Social Security.
I think as long as you had it where it was off in the future, and the people, I think, with the most capability to be upset about it aren't involved in that process. Like, let's say you said, you know, like my kids, that they're 9. So like, okay, well, we're all good. Mm-hmm. But when the kids that are 9 now, they're going to be out of luck. Can we all agree on that? But you're all solid. People might be like, okay with it. And Max certainly wouldn't complain. My kids would be, whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that's the way to do it, is get people to agree to it that aren't really looking at that as like their future yet.
Well, that's a frightening and funny comment. A few years down the road, though, those very kids who you've hoodwinked will become cognizant of it within 10 years.
And it will be, 15. As they say in the business, too late.
That would be too late.
Yes.
What's the difference? I should know this, but I don't know this. Okay. I always hear regular IRA and Roth IRA, but there is a difference between the two, right?
Yeah, absolutely. With the regular IRA, much like your company plan, you get a taxable deduction. So let's say you put $2,000 away in either a company plan, you know, 401k, a 403b, mm-hmm. an IRA, and you make $20,000 for the year, and you put $2,000 in, you're only taxed on 18. So that's a tax deduction.
Mm-hmm.
They both have tax deferral, so your money isn't taxed. You begin to withdraw it. You do it before 59.5, there's a 10% penalty. From 70 on, you're required to do it by IRS regulation. But the Roth, you put after-tax dollars in. And once you take it out after leaving it in for 5 years, there's no taxation on it.
So would you say that one's more beneficial, or does it depend on the circumstance?
It depends on the circumstances, but the more tax-free money you can acquire, the better off you will be. So
okay.
The Roth is a very valid approach.
Can you put your headphones on? I know you're worried about messing up your hair, but it's important because people want to talk to you on the phones.
Yeah, the one.
312-981-7200. Let's start out with Therese. Therese, hi. You're on with Art Miller, the president of Capital Preservation Strategies. Do you have a question for him?
Yes. Refresh my memory. If I'm not correct, and Roosevelt set that up, that was a fund for only that. It was not to be touched for anything else. But if I remember correctly, there was money taken out of there on a constant basis by our government to help supplement them, and they were supposed to pay it back. It was never supposed to end.
Art, the government would never hoodwink us that way, would they? Ever?
No, because governments are inherently honest.
Right.
We all know that. You know, the difficulty is, I think we've, for decades, grown to believe that there's a specific, very technical term, chunk of money there set aside for Social Security, where really the program is managed by the Treasury Department. And there's a wide variety of stories in terms of how that money has been utilized. And
right.
it's tough to ascertain. Unfortunately, because of the changing demographics in the population and the challenging economies we've had, the Treasury coffers need to be replenished. And
exactly. And what about the paying that is constantly being done at this point? The Social Security is not based just on what they put in there. It's also based on what we are putting in, right? The FF, I think it's the FICA or the F.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So was there a question there?
What was the question, Therese?
Yeah. Well, my question is this. If it's continually being, money is being put into it because we have it withdrawn from our payroll, how is it that it's not, well, I know it's not looking at it because it's been, as you said, dipped into or used for other things. I understand that someday we're not going to, Social Security might become a thing of the past. But I think people get frightened when they hear this, when in essence it can't go away unless, like you said, he took that one clause out of this. And you probably would have a riot. But I feel like it is something that can sustain itself as long as people aren't just constantly borrowing something.
Yes. Well, Therese, I don't know if this will answer your question, but there are about 6 proposals that Congress is looking at right now to, quote-unquote, shore up the system. They may be raising taxes on Social Security. They may be increasing the upper limits. Right now, they do not tax any incomes above 118.5. They're looking at taxing incomes at 150, 200, or 250. They're also looking at altering the way the cost of living adjustment is done. Right now, it's based on the consumer price index. This year, there was no cost of living adjustment because wage inflation didn't increase over the last two Octobers. So those are some of the things they're thinking about and how to keep the system going.
Therese, thanks for the phone call. Greatly appreciated. Art, nice to see you. Very
Absolutely.
Helpful information. Art Miller is the president of Capital Preservation Strategies. He's the president. Are you running for re-election, by the way?
I am, and within my office, they say I don't have a very good chance.
Oh, I hate to hear that. CPStrategies.net is the website for Art if you have more questions. Thank you for being here.
Oh, greatly appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN.
Colors.
How did they remember the lyrics to this song? I'd forget the lyrics if I was singing this song.
Cue cards, Bill.
I guess you have to use cue cards. It's Bill Leffin. It's Dane Neal. We're going to talk about colors in just a little bit because they have chosen the world's ugliest color.
You know, they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
And ugliness apparently is as well.
Yep.
You wonder, though, because color is so important. You know, you've seen those like stories where they paint a room a certain color and people just magically heal themselves or feel more positive or energetic or blue and down. So it matters.
Every color has some representation. We'll get into that in just a little bit. I have to ask Steve a question, though. We knew yesterday, and I think maybe even the day before, we kind of knew that there was going to be a sit-down. There was going to be a meeting between President Barack Obama and Bernie Sanders, the presumptive non-candidate for the Democrats. What went on at the meeting, Steve? Do we know?
Well, let's just say Bernie's color's a little blue today.
Oh, no. Now, Bernie was the one who requested this meeting, right?
I think so, but they had talked on the phone Tuesday night, and, you know, in typical Bernie fashion, he got to the White House a little early, so he went across the street to a Pete's and had a scone.
Did he really?
That's love good. That. I just love that
That's
little
nice.
Story. And then waited till it was time. And then he's, you know, like you get to a party before it starts. And
right.
So, you know, then the president was outside to welcome him and walked him into the Rose Garden, you know, clearly for the cameras, arms around each other. And, you know, the guidance was the president was going to nudge him toward a reconciliation and endorsing Hillary Clinton. Clearly, what the president said was, Bernie, before your car leaves the 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, we're going to release a video of me endorsing Hillary Clinton.
Because
it was released just after the senator left the White House. Senator Sanders said, you know, that he is going to assess this. He'll do whatever he can to defeat Donald Trump, but he would not concede until after next Tuesday's primary in Washington, D.C.
The timing of it is interesting because it's Bernie Sanders who requests the meeting, but Barack Obama's move on this is to say, in just a very short span of time, I'm going to endorse Hillary Clinton. So,
well, maybe, you know, they had a phone call. Maybe the president said on Thursday, you know, this is coming out.
Yeah.
And he said, can we have a meeting first? Or, you know, maybe it wasn't as strongly a Bernie idea as it sounds. You know, they might have giving him a little cover that
to
way.
To make it look like it was his idea.
But, you know, obviously they've already got a bill. President Obama and Hillary Clinton already have a campaign event scheduled next week for Green Bay. So, you know, this had been in the works for some time.
Well, Steve, isn't it probably one of those situations where they say, we could do this the easy way or the hard way?
Right,
like,
yeah.
You get to come out and say, hey, it's been a good run, but, you know, I'm going to support this. Or you could be unpleasant and it could just happen. You get to resign or we'll...
Sanders came out and was a bit more conciliatory. He continued the fighting language and then had this video be released and plans for the president to campaign with Hillary. That would have, you know, been more damaging to him. So, yeah, I think the wheels were a little greased here and we're starting to move towards some sort of cooperation between the two campaigns.
Steve, why did it take Barack Obama so long to stand behind Hillary Clinton in her run? It seemed like he waited until she reached her magic number and was the presumptive candidate. So why wasn't his endorsement a week ago or a month ago?
Well, I think he wanted to let it play out, you know, let Sanders have his due. It's been clear for a long, long, long time that Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee. Barack Obama endorsing her 6 weeks ago wouldn't have changed that.
Mm-hmm.
So, as the Democratic leader, why get into that mess until you're needed? Now he's needed to sort of bring these two camps together.
How big of a role do you anticipate him playing?
Big.
You do. You already know the question.
Yeah.
When it comes to the election, when it's Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, you think that Barack Obama will be, if not front and center, a major key player in that, huh?
He said in the interview that he's itching to get out there. Every indication is that he's been. I think he's enjoyed taking on Donald Trump a few times on the campaign trail in the past few weeks. You know, he does that pretty well. He's going to be on Jimmy Fallon tonight.
Yeah.
Much of that's been released. And remember, I don't know how much of this is personal, but it was Trump who forced Barack Obama to release his long-form birth certificate.
Sure.
And that really ridiculous sort of controversy about whether or not he was an American citizen. It was Trump who was fueling the fire and, you know, forced a sitting elected president to prove that he was an American.
Right.
So if the president has any kind of memory at all, I think that will make him a little more giddy when he's out there.
And we remember the last election. It was very contentious between Hillary and Barack. But in the end, you know, after the smoke cleared, she ended up becoming the Secretary of State. Do you think there is a role like that for Bernie Sanders, you know, where somehow they'll come together, where he'll have some kind of elevated situation?
If the Democrats do well in November and they retake the Senate, and there are many more Republican seats up for re-election this cycle than there are Democrats. So right away, the benefit goes to the Democrats. So if the Democrats can retake the Senate, he would become the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee. He's in line for that. So that's a pretty big post.
Steve, it's interesting you said a moment or so ago that you anticipate Barack Obama being a key player in the next few months for Hillary Clinton. When Barack Obama was at a similar stage, he didn't use Bill Clinton all that much, did you think?
He ended up out there eventually.
Yeah. But it wasn't as quick as you would have anticipated.
Well, it was different, you know. I mean, he just beat the guy's wife. And
yeah, I guess that plays into it, doesn't it?
Bill Clinton went off record a couple of times. You know, he said this whole thing's a fantasy land and said a few things. So there was it was rocky between Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but he did eventually use him.
All right. So would you agree with me? No major surprises in this sit down between Barack Obama and Bernie Sanders. No, nothing shocking.
No,
nothing out of the ordinary.
You know, it's one of those things like we've talked about these stories. You know, of course, this is going to happen. Of course, Paul Ryan is going to endorse the Republican nominee.
Yeah.
Of course, the Democratic president's going to endorse the presumptive nominee, you know, but we just sort of run ourselves in circles until it happens.
I don't remember a time, maybe you do, where a president has endorsed the other party's candidate. That's never happened in our lifetime, right?
That would be trouble.
That would be slight trouble for
everybody.
Although,
you know, yeah.
Yep. All right, thank you, Steve. We'll do this. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll discuss the world's ugliest color and what it means to you. Stick around. It's Bill Leff, and Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. Guess the name of this song, Dane. Can you guess it?
I can name that I'm going to need some more notes.
You need a couple more? Hold on. Nope. Song's over. It's one of the shortest songs in the history of broadcasting.
Is what it says. It says what it is. It's all about colors.
Yep. We have a winner. Dane, you're our winner. They have chosen the world's ugliest color. And I think for most people, if you close your eyes right now, you will crash your car. So don't close your eyes right now. But think about, in your head, what is the world's ugliest color? What comes to mind immediately? What would you put as the world's ugliest color?
Well, when you first said that they had, and who has time to do this, right? Is it the Ugliest Color Association of America?
There's an international group that gets together and meets in Zurich, Switzerland, and they decide.
There's a consortium, and then they come up with the smoke out of the
paint
when they come up with the right one.
Yep.
My first thought was, because, you know, colors are, there's so many different ones, but it's got to be somewhere in the brown-green family.
You're right.
And when you showed it to me, I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what I was imagining.
Yep. It's a color that I call, and this is not what the color is called, but I call it murk. You know, there's days that are just murky and they're kind of brown and kind of green. The sky, it looks like there might be a tornado. It might rain. It might be locusts.
Murk. That's not a terrible
That should be the name of it.
You know what you need is you need those people that come up with the name, the nail polish cup. You're right. Like, it's Topaz Sunrise. Right. You know, I mean, it's just a name. Or ice cream namers, they're great at that.
The Max Factor people, somebody in the back who goes, they don't give me any of the good colors. I get the bad ones. I'm going to go with Merc.
But the color itself, you know, we had Pat McDonald came in and he was wearing a hat that exact color. We didn't have the heart, right, to tell him.
Tell him that it's the world's ugliest color.
But looked good on him. I mean, it's an okay color. I think I've got a shirt that color.
There's a color of car that is, I think they call it desert sand, and I can't remember what car has it. It's not a Jeep, but it's something similar to a Jeep, and it's desert sand, and it's kind of a tan, but it's darker and
granular
and more granular, right? And I always think to myself, I know everybody's tastes are different, but I would hate to get up every morning and go to my car and look at it and go, this was the color I picked. What was I thinking that day?
When it comes to color in cars, and it's interesting that you say that, because that is the kind of thing that where colors can be, you know, a sort of, you know, orange is the new black. Obviously, fashion is out there too.
Right.
But when it comes to things that everybody kind of deals with is kind of automobiles. You have, you know, colors that are hot.
Right.
You know, or even kind of trends that are hot. I remember my mom used to talk about the midnight blue and shabby, which
right.
was kind of like a dark blue with kind of the tan,
yeah.
like trim. I mean, so they had names for these things. And those were like the hot cars, you know, or like orange cars.
My dad had a Ford that was candy apple red, and you could see it from space. Like we would get notes from astronauts going, could you tone down the car, please? Because you're blinding us with candy apple red.
Well, what are the hot colors for? I've seen there's a kind of a clay kind of pewter. In fact, like your car is kind of a newish color, a color that you didn't see on cars years
right.
ago.
It's there's,
kind of a pewterish.
Yeah,
like
there's
clay.
A trend in either like a pewter or they're earth tones, but they're more of a metallic earth tone.
Yeah.
Well, so those weren't colors that we grew up with on cars. But yeah, it's funny how it shifts. It was for a long, long time, you didn't want to get a yellow car because it was, you'd go, oh, that's a lemon. The guy's driving around in a lemon, you know? But I don't think kids today, if you said, I'm driving a lemon, they'd go, what kind of mileage does a lemon get? What are you doing?
When it comes to the beauty and the ugly thing, you know, you've got ladies and you've got like red dresses are considered, you know, these are mm-hmm. great, or like a black dress.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder if you put a very like pretty person in that color, Merc, as you've called
Merc.
It. That dress, if it'd be like, oh, not so much.
Such a pretty girl. Why is she wearing
right.
that?
You know, or like guys with the, you know, power ties. You know, you've got to have like a red. You see the presidential, you know, during those debates, they're all wearing red ties to
right.
show. I mean, there's a thought process
right.
behind it.
Yeah.
And you wonder if Merc, your color, will ever find its place.
I wonder. Colors can conjure up a lot of associations, it says here on MSN. But apparently only one specific hue has the power to minimize appeal and maximize perceived harm. Researchers pinpointed the world's ugliest color, and it's been lovingly described as dirty, tar, or some even refer to that color as death. That's the color
Ooh,
that I'm calling Merc.
It's the color you'll turn
death
if you
is
stop
a little,
breathing
I know,
right, long enough.
Right. I think that's a little severe. I wouldn't call it color death. They have named the color, now I don't think unless you're in the color business, you would know this, Pantone 448C.
Yeah, I wouldn't, that wasn't what I'm like, oh, Pantone
448C.
Yeah,
oh, that's the color.
448C.
But it's also known more commonly as opaque couche, C-O-U-C-H-E with a thing over it. That's the one I call it. I don't call it.
Yeah, for the
Pantone
people that don't think in numbers or
French
or speak couche, yeah. The it seemed to me for the it's kind of like swamp water, kind of a moss green.
That's it.
You know,
that's
what it looked like.
That's it. This color may get a bad rap, but the sewage tinged hue, which they used to call Hugh Jackman that when he was a kid, and it would
sewage
make him cry every
yeah.
time. This sewage tinged hue actually has an important mission. Out of the entire rainbow of colors, experts chose the green-brown shade to discourage smoking. See, what they did was, in Europe, they needed a color that when people would buy cigarettes would turn them off. It was so visually unappealing that it would put the cancer aside for a little bit.
Right.
They just wanted a color that would remind you how bad it was. So they chose this color to put on cigarette packages in Australia and in Europe to say to people, this is bad. Look, the color's bad. The product's bad. You don't want this.
But yet somehow you're compelled to buy it.
Right. Despite all that, you are compelled to buy it. It says, back in 2012, the Australian government hired research agency GFK to spearhead a new package design for all their tobacco products. But instead of the marketing firm's usual goal, they had to accomplish the exact opposite. Every carton had to look as unappealing as possible, so they marketed it in this color, this Merck color.
Do you think that's – I mean, you hear about the patch, the Nicoderm maybe being hypnotized. Do you ever think it was like, you know what? I just saw the color, and I just had to set those cigarettes down. Of course, when we were making, you know, for cigarettes, some of the advertising, we've got the romantic, you know, cowboy out on the range.
Sure.
Or else the camel.
Funny camel.
Comical,
for the kids.
Smoking, addicted camel.
You know what? I had 2 years when I wasn't doing radio, and I worked for an ad agency part-time. And they were explaining to me how important the colors were. And I think most people know this if you know anything about marketing. Colors are so important that red and yellow, that's the reason McDonald's uses them so much, they bring people in most often. And at the time,
wow,
this company had Miller Genuine Draft as one of their products. And they said, we're so lucky to have gold and black because those are, in the alcohol industry, gold and black are the sexiest colors by far. Nothing comes close to gold and black. And that's what Miller Genuine Draft had. And they were thrilled because they said that just subliminally triggers some sexual appeal. When you see it on a product, on a can or on a bottle, you go, that's sexy, gold and black.
I could see that.
Yeah, kind of, right?
I could see that.
Yeah. We need to take a quick break. We have news coming up in just a little bit. And then, because you've requested it, a janitor who sings opera in 4 different languages.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. We'll take a quick break and then that. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy on WGN. Oh, thank you so much, Steve. It's Bill Leff, and Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy Snyder. And Dane, I know before the show is over, and that's only in the next 20-some-odd minutes, you have a very valuable prize to give away to a listener, a lucky listener, correct?
I know, right? It's a lucky listener. Anybody who's able to listen to WGN is, of course, lucky. And if you can get out to some of the food places, that's great, and experience the different cultures, whether it's Italian, right? Mm-hmm. And our next guest is going to do a little bit of Italian mm-hmm. stuff. But coming up, I've got 2 tickets to the Italian Street Food Festival happening over at Eataly, just a little bit over from here. And it's Saturday, June 17th and the 18th, 2 time frames, 5 to 7. Or early, right?
Yep.
Or 7 to 9. There's 15 food stations, 4 house-made beers. This is it. The fried mozzarella and the all-new pizza alla Paola. I've got to bring some in for you.
Because that sounds good.
It's the only oven of its kind in the country making this. Mm. They've got it, right? And all-access ticket packs, $42. But listeners today are going to win. We've got one set of 2 passes. So you can bring a friend.
Yep.
For all access passes. You can go to Eataly.com for more information about it. But we've got 2 pack of passes, all access, for next 17th and 18th.
Don't call yet, but sometime between now and the end of the show at 3 o'clock, we will have that prize for you. So stay tuned for that. First, though, a story that I've never heard anything like in my life. Keenan Kyles is here. 5 nights a week, Keenan works over at Channel 7 at WLS Television. As a janitor. And Keenan, you've been there at Channel 7 for, I think you said, 6 years?
6 years, yeah. 6 years now.
But in addition to being a janitor over at WLS Television, you have a side job. You're a vocal coach at the Fine Arts Building, and you sing opera.
Yeah, and I'm also a visual merchandising manager / assistant manager for a department store.
But that's all you do is just those 4 things? That's kind of
it?
No, that's not enough.
So you love to stay active. You're great at singing, and you're a neat freak.
I wouldn't say all of that. I've acquired some skills since I've been there.
While you've been working there at Channel 7, was the staff aware of the fact that you're such an accomplished opera singer? Did they know that?
Nobody actually knew.
Nobody knew.
Until just April. I invited one of the staff members to my recital at the Fine Arts Building, and she checked it out, and she was just like, wow, I didn't know you sang opera. And I was like, yeah, you know.
And then word spread pretty quickly, right?
Yeah. Ever since Frank Matthew did the story, ABC News picked it up, GMA.
Yeah.
So many different, like.
And it was so effective that Ron Majors retired to follow his dream of opera singing. He wants to be an opera singer.
Well, when you're an inspiration, Bill.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to, I mean, so many different musical styles that are out there, and if you're a great singer, you can probably do so many of them. But what drew you to opera? Because opera, I mean, it's been around as long as, well, forever, but it's not something for everybody, right?
Yeah, you know, with opera, it's the drama, it's the acting, it's the phrasing, it's the form. You know, it's something different than, you know, country music or R&B or pop. It acquires a different level of skill, and I just wanted to challenge myself to live up to that skill, and I've done fairly well.
Oh,
so
I would say, well, we'll explain what you've done in the past with this career and what you're doing in the future, because it's mm-hmm. exciting. But when you were a kid, like, what do you remember the first time you even attempted to sing operatically?
Well, I started with the Chicago Children's Choir.
Oh, you did?
And that was my intro to classical music. So it was the Handel Messiah. It was the Bach Cantata. Of course, it was in a choral setting.
Yeah.
But that was my first time, I would say, I ever did anything that was in the classical genre.
Yeah.
And then I went on to study opera roles at Gallery 37. And that's when I was actually assigned one role. And that was the big, that was my big, like, oh, wow. This is like
the big time.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with it ever since then.
Are other members of your family musically inclined? Do you have a parents or a brother and sister, anybody who can sing as well? Yeah.
My sister sings. My mother does sing as well, but they sing in church and things of that such. My sister is classically trained, just like myself.
Really?
But we used to actually sing a lot together. Yes,
but children. Then you just got too good.
I mean, you know, somebody has to lead the pack.
But there's something, I've heard this about several siblings who sing, both brothers and sisters, that there's something, because of the way your vocal cords are similar, it makes it even prettier to hear. I'll give you an example. I don't know if you know who the Roaches are. It's some sisters who sing. And when they sing together, it's just beautiful. And, and there's other families, so that must go on with you and your sister.
You know, and me and my sister... down ultimately the most favorite person to sing with.
Yes, good.
Because when we do sing, we do understand each other more. We understand how we flow and how we move. So every melisma, every run, every riff is together.
Right.
Perfectly in sync because we just have that connection as brother and sister.
So oh, that's so, so much nice. Fun. That's so nice. What about, like, I'm thinking when you're a kid and you're seeing opera, because we mentioned other kinds of music, opera very often is done in other languages, mm-hmm. and you might not be understanding those languages. Mm-hmm. So how do you process that if you're watching an opera and you're not really sure of what exactly the storyline is?
Well, for when it comes to text, I always have to translate for myself. So for example, if I was to get a score today and somebody was to tell me, we need you to perform this in a month, the first thing I would do is I would translate it. And, you know, back in the day, it was a little bit harder, but now Google has, progressed so much that I can just type in translation to Carmen or translation to Don Giovanni.
Yeah.
And the whole translation for
it's
the whole
right
score.
There.
So that helps me connect. And once I get the lyrics and everything, I'm set. But, you know, singing more and more and more of that language, like Italian, by the end of your career, you're almost fluent.
Is that right? Yeah.
You know so much Italian because you've sung it so many times. So
it's beautiful.
Yeah. It's fun.
Now, has there been anybody that's come up to you while you're doing some of the janitorial duties or some of these other things that say, come on, like, I mean, can you just spend more time doing this? Or is it that you just have this love for staying active, doing other things? You say you're doing some retail stuff. Do people just need you and you can't say no?
Yeah, you're like, look, I gotta honestly, go sing. It is like every job that I have, I'm in a position of authority.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say that I like to be in a position of authority, but it feels good to be able to lead.
Oh, of course.
And that's what it is. Yeah. Especially like with voice lessons. It feels so good to have that impact on my students, to be able to for us to have that trust with each other. And that's what I just love about it. Like, I wouldn't mind leaving all of my jobs.
Really?
Yeah. But I mean,
for a lucrative singing career?
Yeah, you know, for a good singing career. But until then, I just love being able to say, yeah, guys, you're sounding good. You're doing this, helping people find something great about their voice.
You know what it reminds me of? Other people can hear that, not just me, right? That's Orion somewhere in the background. We're going to bring Orion in to do a duet with you in just a little bit, Keenan. Wait till you hear this guy sing. He's amazing. You know what it reminds me of is, I don't know if you've seen the movie Good Will Hunting, but in Good Will Hunting, Matt Damon's character is cleaning up the classrooms at college, and people don't know that he's a genius. And it's a very similar storyline to yours, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, thank you for calling me a genius. I always
welcome. You're welcome.
But it is. It's definitely something special that a lot of people do not know. So I'm glad that, you know, I never expected it to be such a big thing when people found out, but it is becoming like a growing big thing. And that's great. I mean, I'm glad that more and more people know about my story and how you have to juggle a lot of
things. It's like a movie. It's amazing. We're going to have you sing in just a little bit. We got to take a quick break and we're going to have you sing. And then the part that I haven't mentioned while you've been here, but I have throughout the day is, you don't just sing opera, but you sing opera in several different languages.
Yes, I do.
How many languages? Five?
Five really well. Seven if you want to push it.
You sing in Russian, you sing in German, you sing in French, Italian, and Thousand Island. All the salad,
right?
All the salad dressing company countries.
Yeah.
In English, I guess, is the other one I'm leaving out, right?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So when we come back, you'll do something for
us? Of course.
I can't
wait.
Yeah. Keenan Kyles is here. An amazing story. Janitor by day, opera singer by night.
Yeah.
It's Bill F. and Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy on WGN. Bill Leff and it's Dane Neal sitting in for Wendy Snyder. Keenan Kyles is our guest. A story unlike any I've ever heard before. Keenan works as a janitor over at WLS at Channel 7 by day. Oh, yeah, he has other fine side jobs, but the reason he's here is because he sings some spectacular opera on the side. And Keenan, as we just pointed out, not just in English, but also in Russian, in German, in French, and in Italian. So I thought, if you're okay with this, we'll have you sing a little bit.
Okay, okay.
And then if you're, again, only if you're okay with this.
Of course.
At some point while you're singing, we'll shout out another language.
Okay.
And then you will sing opera in that language.
Or a cleaning question.
Or a cleaning question. Ah. Dane may have a question.
How do you get this stain out?
He's got some iodine stains that will not get out.
I'm here to answer them all.
So go, if you wouldn't mind, go to our opera microphone that we always have here in the studio whenever opera singers come by.
I love it.
And what will you be performing for us?
It's up to you.
Well, hold on a second. Let me turn this on. Hold on.
Like we've only just begun. No, I'm just kidding.
You tell me, what are you most, and will it be the same song in five different languages or different songs?
No, it'll be different, all five different songs.
It'll be five different songs. Boy, you're good. You're good. All right, so do you want to start out in English or do you want to start out in one of the other languages?
Let's leave English for last.
Okay, English will be the last one. All right, hold on. Everything sounds good? Okay. All right, so again, this is Keenan Kyles, sings opera in five different languages, also a janitor over Channel 7. Take it away, Keenan.
Madame mia, il catano che questo, delle belle che ami a padre mio, un catano che li è che ho fatto, osservate, leggete come, osservate,
French.
Legge, votre tour, je pouvous le rendre, seigneur, seigneur, qu'avec le soudan.
Russian. German.
Bring Glück und Gloria. Ach, wir armen, armen Leute, alle Tage so wie heute.
English.
What is the English
word? Uh-oh.
Why do the nations of Europe race together? Why do the people imagine a vain thing? Why do the nations race?
Dutch. Oh, you can't sing it in Dutch. That's impossible. Wow, Keenan, wow. Wow, five for five. Every one of them great. Wow, are you good. That's unbelievable.
Thank you.
And did you breathe at all during that? Because I know we threw
short
five
breaths.
Of
Except for the English. I told you, English is always
that's the challenge.
A pain for, like, I don't know, because we're always singing in Italian or French. So when it's English, it's like, wait, if you really think about it, what English operas are out there?
I can't think of any offhand. I really can't.
I think he had an oxygen drip, right?
Right. Now, you said you're fluent in five, and you did all five for us. The two that you're just okay on are what? What are the other two languages?
Well, I used to do a little Chinese. It's like a Chinese opera that I did maybe 5 or 6 years ago in Spanish.
It's a Chinese opera, but you sang it in Spanish or
no,
the other way around?
I sung it in Chinese, but the other language that I'm not really fluent in when it comes to opera is Spanish.
Oh, it is. Okay. All right.
Yeah. But Spanish is easy to speak because it's really closely related to Italian.
But singing is a different story.
Yeah. It's just the Spanish composers weren't the
Well,
what are you going to do?
It's okay.
That's all right.
Well, you're going to be doing some traveling, obviously, for the singing and everything. And music is one of those things. You know, you've got art, you've got food, you've got music that's kind of transformative and transcends, you know, borders and cultures and things like that. Like, do you feel that, you know, having this be your specialty as far as opera, that you're learning more
and can inspire other people to learn more about all these different cultures and all these different countries through music.
Yeah, I mean, every time I go somewhere, I always learn something different. I mm-hmm. always have a different experience, which is why I'm always looking for gigs outside of the country, because you can learn so much, you can grow so much. You know, when I was in Italy last year, there wasn't like a hotel that I stayed in. I actually stayed in an apartment.
Really?
So, you know, I lived like them. I ate like them. You know, they have these 4-hour siestas in the middle of the day, which is like crazy. But, you know, you do all of those
crazy
things.
Good.
It's so good. I don't know why America is slipping on
you
that.
You should have cut out
but,
here in the States.
Yeah,
right?
You always learn. And you can come back, and I share so many stories with my students and so many stories with like kids that I speak to. It's amazing.
I can imagine. In Italy, what was the opera that you were performing?
I was in Gianni Schicchi as well as Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I know the story of Hansel and Gretel a little bit better than Gianni Schicchi. What goes on in that
Gianni
one?
Gianni Schicchi is a crazy family. One of the elders is dying, and everybody in the family is trying to get his money, and he ends up tricking them by giving his goods to, like, he already sold them or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like fun.
So, oh my God, it's so much fun. Like,
no witches pushing kids into ovens like in Hansel and Gretel, because that's always my favorite scene.
Yeah.
And now you have a trip coming up, and this sounds exciting too. Yeah. You're going to Scotland, to Glasgow in Scotland, and what opera are you doing there?
I'll be in La Boheme as Colline there. So,
that's going to be fun. La Boheme is, of course, the Boheme. That's what it means.
Yes.
That's how it translates.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's the story, if you ever heard of, if you ever seen Rent, it's the exact same story.
It is, isn't
Rent
it?
Rent is in English and La Boheme is in, it was, Rent is based off of La Boheme.
Yeah. Oh, that's so, going to be so much fun.
Yeah, and then I'm going up to Edinburgh Festival to do a few opera recitals.
And over at Channel 7, they give you the time. They say, we know you have to do other things, so they
They've
give you the time
They've
been
very supportive. My manager, Carmen Zidanez, is extremely supportive. She gave me 2 months off last summer, and she's giving me all the time that I need this summer off.
Oh, that's going to be nice.
Yeah.
That's going to be so nice. You are amazing, Keenan.
Thank
You're
you
nothing
so much.
Short of amazing. I'm doing a production at Johnny Skaziki at my house in the summer. If you want to come by and audition,
sure.
We'd love to have you.
Of course. Yeah.
I'm third guy from the left in that.
Right. We'll get you a part in that. So continued success. I'm so happy
you so
for
much.
You. You really are
that.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Dane, we have something to give away. We talked about it earlier. What is it and how do they win?
Well, of course, Keenan, he went to Italy and he sang. And there's a place here, of course, that will make you sing right after you get to eat called Italy. And we've got 2 all-access passes for their Italian Street Food Festival coming up on June 17th and the 18th. And since he's comfortable, completely comfortable, in 5 of the language, maybe the 5th caller
That's
can win those
it.
2 passes.
Call us right now, 312-981-7200. Be caller number 5. If you want to know more about Keenan, you want to go to kkyles.com. That's the letters K-K-Y-L-E-S, kkyles.com. It's all there. You're fantastic,
Thank
Keenan.
You so
really,
much
really
for
good.
Me. I appreciate it.
Call right now. Oh, you're so welcome. Call right now, win Dane's prize, and then we'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. It's Bill along with Dane in for Wendy on WGN.